sucker.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow, live on Spike TV, is Glory World Series. With me, my man, Joe Schilling, last-minute edition. I want to talk to you about some shit, dude.
Let's talk.
Because I was working out in my gym yesterday, dying, okay? All I'm doing is hitting pads. No one's hitting me back. I'm fucking exhausted. And what I like to do when I'm working out is I like to put fights on for motivation. Mm. And I'm watching you. And you're fighting in the last man standing tournament. You got to fight three times this night. You're fighting. You're going four fucking rounds. Exhausting, ridiculous fight. And then I remember this shit.
Oh shit!
Oops, we just dropped Elvis. Elvis has left the building.
Yeah,
I remember this shit. Ryan Loco sent me this picture. What the fuck, dude? How are you able to have that kind of cardio? I mean, you fought three times that night, four rounds your first fight before you won by knockout, mm-hmm. and you're smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Oh, Joe. I didn't want to talk about this last time. It was fucking first 5 minutes of the show. Here we go.
But it's just, I couldn't believe it. I really have a hard time believing it. Like, I was watching the fights. I was like, how the fuck does this guy have this kind of energy?
Well, to be honest, I was exhausted in the third round. When I went back to my corner, I looked at my coach, and I'm like, you know, he's like, I think you're going to have to go another round. And I'm like, fuck. I did not want to go another round. I was exhausted. You know, I just wanted to win, and that's kind of what I did.
Well, it was just a ridiculous fight, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, the whole tournament was ridiculous. It's crazy to make someone fight three times in a night, but that first fight was just so fucking back and forth and wild and crazy, and for you to go that hard while you smoke cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, like I said, I can't justify it. I'm about ready to quit. My last fight, my cardio was, you know, I've done kickboxing for so long where you know, I get tired like anybody else, but for whatever reason, it's never really bothered me that much. And in the last fight, he was holding me a lot, and just the cardio system's completely different. And it's, it's coming to an end. I'm getting really sick of smoking. I'm getting really sick of explaining, having this conversation, Joe. I mean, Joe's the reason. When I quit, this will be the reason.
Well, good. Well, yeah. I wanted to talk to you about these stupid vaporizing things, but Simon Marcus, the guy you're fighting, is a tough motherfucker. You guys going back and forth three rounds, and then you go into the fourth round, and you still manage to knock him out in the fourth round. That was a crazy fight. And to know that you're doing all this, giving yourself, I mean, what kind of a cardio deficit do you think cigarettes gives you? Is it 5% maybe?
I really don't know. I've been smoking since before I started doing kickboxing. So it was something that was just, you know, my cardio always sucks at the beginning of the camp, and then by the end of camp, and I'm outrunning everybody else. And I'm sure it's a deficit. For
you would have amazing cardio if you didn't smoke.
Yeah.
I mean, think of that.
Yeah.
Unless, you know what I used to think when I was young? I was really retarded. I would think that maybe smoking cigarettes is like weightlifting for your lungs. Like, it makes your lungs work harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if you work out really hard and you smoke, like, maybe your lungs have to, like, work extra hard to deal with that smoke and they get stronger.
I quit for one fight when it was my last amateur fight. And my coach, you know, was against it, obviously.
He was against you quitting?
Oh, against me smoking. Oh. You know? So,
he's like, come on, man.
I wish.
Don't be a pussy. Yeah. Have a beer.
Exactly. So, I quit for 3 months. I trained really, really hard. And for whatever reason, I was exhausted in the fight. And after the second round, they're like, you know, seconds out. And I'm like, look at my coach. I'm like, I can't stand up. Like, my legs were, like, locked up. And he had to, like, lift me off the stool. And I got robbed in the – I lost that fight, but it was – you know, everybody said I won the fight, but whatever. But that was my coach after the fight was like, you know what? You quit. You did everything I asked you to. You know, do whatever you want to do after that.
And, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if your body was suffering nicotine withdrawal.
I don't know. Or if I was overconfident that my cardio was going to be so much better that I wasn't pacing or something.
Oh, but, that could be right.
Yeah.
That's a big issue, right? That a lot of people that watch fights really have no idea. Mm-hmm. The energy management that's going on. Like, there's a whole bunch of management going on during a fight, and energy management is, like, a big issue. Knowing when to blow it out, and that's why you see, like, a lot of guys. Chael Sonnen on the podcast said it best. He said, if you try to win by knockout but don't win by knockout, you often lose the decision.
Yeah.
You just don't have the gas to keep going.
Right. That's pretty true.
Is that an experience thing, you think, like, when you're managing your energy like that in the ring?
I think so. I think it's also has a lot to do with like hiding how tired you are. You know what I mean? And like that example, for example, that fight with Simon Marcus you were talking about. I usually, the way I hide it, now the secret's going to be out there, but like,
oh, shit.
I'll do like a little walk off. And if you notice, like, the ref broke us, John McCarthy broke us. And like, I turned my back and I was walking away and I was like, catching my breath, and then he, like, you know, he stalks me, and as he's coming, I'm waiting for that one big shot, you know. So it's like you're exhausted, you pace yourself for a second to give that next explosion, to give that next explosion, you know. It's just experience. I've always been tired in every fight I've ever had, so it's, I'm at that level, you know. But like my last fight with Bellator, you know, I was just a different level of exhausted from the wrestling and the jiu-jitsu that I haven't been doing for 15 years of my life. And you know, I'm at a point now in my career where it's like I've worked my ass off for so long that like kickboxing comes natural to me, you know. And with MMA, it's like if I want to, you know, yeah, I have half of the game down, but if I want to really take this to the next level, I have to improve on the ground and in the wrestling, and that's going to take me improving my cardio, I think, you know. So,
are you committed totally to fighting in both MMA and kickboxing, or do you go back and forth on this, or?
You know, I love kickboxing and I want to do it forever. And if the opportunity stays there for me to do both, then yes. But I definitely have to step my game up in MMA. If, you know, I really hate my record. This last fight fucking drives me nuts.
The last fight was a close one up until it got to the ground. It just seemed like you were having a real hard time getting up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's such a giant issue when it comes to the difference between the kind of endurance that you have with grappling, mm-hmm. and you know, and your ability to calculate all the different moves and all the different, like, it takes so long to get grappling information in your body and mm-hmm. in your head. There's just so much stuff that's going on where guys are holding you down. So, like, there's a few guys that get the takedown defense game down, like Krokop did in Pride, mm-hmm. and then start to become really successful. But once they actually get taken down and actually get held down on the ground, like, it just saps you of your energy, man.
Right.
And it takes away. I was watching. I was like, I wonder how frustrating this is for him, because you're used to fighting your style of fight. Your right. style of fight is kickboxing,
right?
You know, and then all of a sudden you got this guy on top of you, and you can't get up, and you know he's holding you down, and nothing really was happening on the ground. Like mm-hmm. there wasn't a lot of ground and pound. It wasn't like real significant submission attempts, but it's just keeping you from doing the shit you want to do.
Right? Yeah, it was incredibly frustrating. Incredibly frustrating.
You know? Do you think about just not doing it anymore?
Not really, because I, you know, it's just not who I am. When things are frustrating and hard, I don't quit. You know,
right.
I just step it up to the next level usually, which is, you know, something I like about myself. So I don't want to change that. But
no, that's a good quality, yeah, for
just,
sure.
It's just, you know, it's frustrating. And then, you know, I obviously have things that I need to work on, and I, you know, I had stuff in the camp. You know, I was really sick during the camp, and it's, you can continue to kickbox when you're really sick, you know, to an extent. But, like, you can't do jiu-jitsu and be, like, drooling and slobbering and fucking sweating in some guy's face when you have the flu, you know? So, like, for that camp, I only had, like, 3 weeks of jiu-jitsu, and then I was sick for 3 weeks. I had a fucking bronchitis and lung infection and this nasty shit, which probably fucking smoking wasn't, you know?
Were you smoking while you had the bronchitis?
I was just smoking all the time, John.
What I wanted to ask you is about these stupid vaporizer things that people mm-hmm. keep sending me, these vape.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm actually sponsored by Firebrand, and it's been good. I think I'm going to start using that stuff to quit.
That's a way better thing for your lungs, right?
I mean, I think so.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. You know, I'm sure in 20 years they're going to say that was the reason that, you know, Joe got brain cancer.
I wonder how, I mean, I know that being a professional fighter takes a tremendous amount of dedication and time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, like, when I see you in Glory and I see you also in Bellator, I'm like, man, does this guy have the amount of time that it takes to compete at the level that you compete at in kickboxing mm-hmm. in both? I mean, do you have the time to put in to jiu-jitsu and to wrestling defense and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's been really tough, you know, the... At the beginning of the year, I was really excited about it. Oh, it's going to be a busy year, you know. But it's really hard to have a fight and then immediately go right into another training camp for a different style or for, you know, for another sport. And it's, you know, it's like my next fight's June 26th. And it's like, I just fought and I'm jumping right back into
Bellator
camp.
Or a
Bellator.
Back in it again.
Yeah, which is nice because Lisa's two in a row, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, it should be good. I'm leaving tomorrow to Florida. I'll be American Top Team for 3 weeks.
That's a good move.
I'm going to be sparring with Thiago Alves for his fight with Carlos Condit. and then, you know, working a lot with their wrestling team and with King Mo out there. So
that's very smart for him, because you know, Carlos and you have similar builds. Mm-hmm. That's very smart for him, and that's great for you too. That's a great camp as far as like wrestling knowledge and grappling knowledge.
Right. You know, like I said, you know, I'm not the kind of person that, like, when I lose a fight, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this shit anymore. I'll just go to where I'm good, you know?
Right.
What do I need to do different? I need to get with a better team that's more focused on MMA and has better wrestlers. I'm, you know, work this out.
I totally get that, but I would wonder how you could do both. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I would wonder. I mean, I could totally get you saying, hey, you know what? Right now, I'm in my athletic prime. I think that the eyes are on MMA right now, and I'm just going to make the jump. Mm-hmm. And just fully make the jump. But to do both, I mean, you're still active at a world-class level in kickboxing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're fighting world champions in kickboxing.
I'm the real number one contender right now for glory, but I couldn't take
that
fight.
That's so a statement, motherfuckers.
The last person, I knocked out Simon. I was ranked number one. He beat two guys that weren't even in the top three and somehow got ranked number one to fight Artem Levin. I mean, I'm just saying.
Well, those are good fights, though.
They were good fights, but you know, that's what I'm saying, Joe. Just got said.
It got said. Now, like, to make the decision, though, to, like, say if you have a camp and you're going to go and do this Bellator fight in June, and then if they offer you a kickboxing fight, like, say, in August, is that a difficult decision? Like, do you say, like, hey, you know, I would rather be kickboxing for, like, 4 or 5 months, really get sharp and in the groove, or is it okay to bounce back and forth? Do you do enough kickboxing during your MMA training?
I think I can go back and forth with kickboxing at that level. You know, it's, you just cut out. The problem is when I do the kickboxing fight and then they offer me a Bellator fight right away, because if I fought Bellator in June and then I was going to fight kickboxing in August, the end of June, July, and August, I wouldn't be doing any wrestling or, you know, I just don't have time. I'd be focusing on kickboxing, sparring, all that stuff. So that was kind of the issue. You know, it's going back and forth.
Would it make any difference at all if it was a Muay Thai fight instead of kickboxing? Like, if you're doing Muay Thai all the time and then went right into MMA, where you got a little bit more grappling, would that have any effect?
Possibly. I mean, I still train pretty much the same. The difference would be the elbows for that. Not so much. I'm still clinching with kickboxing, just not for as long a period of time. You know, every referee is different. Even with glory, it's like they say no clinching, but then you watch my fight with Simon, there was still way longer than 5 seconds of clinching in there. So training wise, it's still the same for me.
That's one of the reasons why I was so particularly impressive that first 4-round fight, because Simon Marcus is a Muay Thai guy, and he's known, that's one of his specialties is his clinch. Mm-hmm. And he's just very physically strong, and he fights a draining kind of fight. Just Absolutely. Really gets a hold of guys, manipulates you around, throws a lot of knees and elbows in the clinch, and to fucking go 4 rounds with that guy and then fight 2 more times afterwards. And then against Wayne Barrett and fucking Artem Levin, like, holy shit.
Yeah, when I was walking out or limping out for the, you know, after I beat Simon the first time, I was, like, on a high. And then beating, you know, Wayne, I was just like, fuck, I got to fight one. There was no high. It was like, I got to fucking one more fight after this. It's crazy. And we were in the back dressing room, and everybody was just in shock and just kind of looking at me like, how the fuck are you going to do this? And I'm looking at them, and I'm like, I have no fucking idea. I'm going to do this right now. And I was limping to the ring, and I'm just like.
And when was this? When was the cigarette?
That cigarette was right after the fight with Robert Thomas in the dressing room. Ryan Loco showed up in my dressing room before I got in the shower and was like taking pictures. And I'm like, he's like, can I take, I won't take a photo. I'm like, Ryan, just take the picture. And here it is.
Now, when you fought in the tournament, you didn't have any cigarettes in between fights or anything, did you?
After Simon, I went outside and had a cigarette. True story.
Oh my God. You had a cigarette and then fought twice more. Damn,
I mean, dude. For all this cigarette talk, I should get sponsored by Marlboro, right?
You should.
I mean, fuck the Reebok deal. Marlboro, what's up?
Cowboy gets sponsored by Budweiser.
Does he?
Yeah, he's always wearing Budweiser shirts. They got to be throwing him some cash. I can't imagine he's not.
Yeah.
I don't see the dude without a Budweiser shirt on.
Yeah. I could be their poster boy.
Yeah. Well, if anybody would, like Marlboro would love you.
Yeah.
Like, look at this fucking guy. You know? What do you smoke? What kind do you smoke?
Marlboro Lights.
There you go. They'd probably be like, look, folks, the lights are okay.
Yeah, right?
You know, like, this guy's got great cardio.
This is perfect.
How does a man fight so many rounds, you know? 3 different guys, 1 night. Come on. It's not that bad.
Right.
Don't be a pussy.
Don't be a pussy.
Yeah, those vaporizer things though, they have helped a lot of people, right?
Yeah. Like,
what about gum? You ever try that shit?
I can't stand it. Just nicotine gum. Just not into it. And I'm like, it can't be good for your mouth. Chewing on fucking nicotine.
I don't think nicotine is really as bad as the chemicals that are in it and the burning of the plant matter. Hmm. I think there's something about the burning of the actual leaves themselves and then the 500 plus chemicals that the cigarette companies put into cigarettes to enhance the flavor and to enhance the addictive properties of it.
So there's an interesting topic. So now Philip Morris is making their own weed products now.
Is that true?
I heard that they had, they had some big fucking thing and that they're getting ready for the whole distribution of, yeah. So they have like Marlboro weed cigarettes. It's like, you go ahead and take something like natural and healthy and then give it to a cigarette company and watch what happens. And now people will be getting fucking cancer and all kinds of shit from smoking weed.
Yeah, right. They'll become Republicans. Right. Like something will happen. They'll put some shit in the cigarettes. And you're like, you know what? I don't think I'm real excited about gay marriage. Like all of a sudden people have these weird Republican right wing views. Right. I think that it's real possible because if you see those natural cigarettes, like those American, mm-hmm. what are those, American Spirit?
American Spirits.
Those are just tobacco, right? Yeah. And apparently they taste like shit.
Yeah.
Not good?
A lot of my friends smoke them. I'm not a big fan. And they'll burn forever, which I guess is without the chemicals. Like a cigarette, if you light a cigarette and you sit in an ashtray, it will burn all the way down. Like if you lit like a joint and sit in an ashtray, it would burn out. You know, it won't right. burn the whole thing. But I guess it's the chemicals in it.
They keep
it lit or keep it burning. And then the American Spirits, it's like, it takes forever to smoke one.
Yeah.
Which is kind of good. You only smoke like half of it and get rid of it.
But they're disgusting, right?
They're pretty nasty, in my opinion.
Does it give you the same rush? Like, that's what you're getting, right? This nicotine rush, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. It would give you the same feeling.
Because I think that tobacco itself is, I don't think it's good for you, but I don't think it's nearly as bad for you as the tobacco with all the jazz in it.
Yeah, right.
Did you ever see that movie, The Insider, Russell Crowe?
Mm-mm.
It's about, you know, you don't really know how much, whenever they do a movie on real life situations, you don't know how much fuckery is involved and right. manipulate things. But the movie is about a guy who is a scientist working for cigarette companies that his whole deal is figuring out how to make them more addictive. And then he testifies against cigarette companies and they're fucking stalking his home, scaring the shit out of him. And it's apparently supposedly, you got to say that, based on a real story.
Based on a real story.
Yeah, but there are hundreds of chemicals, 500 yeah. plus chemicals that they put into cigarettes for various reasons.
Yeah, why would they do that?
That menthol taste.
Mm.
I want to know how that got into the black community. How did menthol?
The Kohl's.
Yeah,
Kohl's. It's the Nike,
is that what
upside
it was?
Down Nike sign.
Is it?
And no, that's the Newport. Is it Newport?
Yeah,
Newport has the yeah. Nike sign. I don't know.
But yeah, how they do Kohl's? That's true, right? Kohl's. It's like, it's interesting how like certain cigarettes are for, I mean, they're just fucking cigarettes, but mm-hmm. they figured out a way to brand them so they appeal towards certain ethnic groups. You know, like Lucky Strikes. You got to be some sort of a savage, like mechanic with fucking a missing pinky. You know, if you're smoking those filtered Lucky Strikes,
yeah.
you're probably drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon right out of the can. You know,
right?
Your fingernails are always dirty. You're drinking horrible booze and you're smoking Lucky Strikes. Everybody knows that. You don't see black people smoking Lucky Strikes. When was the time you saw a black guy smoking American Spirits? No, those are white hipsters, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Try to be natural.
Yeah.
But Kohl's?
I just remember Kohl's, so like there was an Eddie Murphy movie, and they would always have like the black guy, like, where's my pack of Kohl's, man? Give me that pack of Kohl's.
My mother used to smoke Kohl's. I don't know what that says about my mom.
Mm.
Can't be good.
Mm. I don't want to say anything about Joe's mom.
Yeah, man. If you think, like, if you see a young white gal and she's smoking Kohl's and you're a black guy, you probably think you got a shot.
Mm.
Like, I see what she's doing. She's sending out the bat signal. It's just bizarre that there's certain cigarettes that they appeal to certain ethnic groups.
Yeah, huh? Never thought about that.
Yeah, it's marketing, man. Marketing is fucked. How clean is your diet when you, I mean, obviously you have the issue with the cigarettes, but other than the issue with the cigarettes, how clean is your diet when you're training?
When I'm training, I just, you know, I don't eat like fast food and shit like that, but that's pretty much it. You know, it's pretty weight management based, I would think. You know, if my weight's good, then I eat, you know, what I want. But if it's, you know, when I used to fight like 175, 168, then it was like a month of low carb. It was killing myself. Chicken salads three times a day.
Oh, so you do like an Atkins type deal?
Yeah. When I do low carb, like, it works really well. Like,
to
really,
take off really the weight?
Well. Yeah.
Doesn't that fuck with your energy?
Yeah, it would, especially as the fight got closer and I would really start cutting back on carbs. Like, I would try to keep carbs like under 100 a day, and then as I got closer, it would be like under 50, and like the last week, it'd be like almost no carbs. And then I'd find myself like pulling out in front of, in traffic. Like, your brain works off of carbs and water. So, yeah, it wasn't good. When I went up to 187 for Glory, it was a lot easier to make weight, and my performance was way, way, way better.
Yeah, I would only imagine. There's got to be a significant point of, you know, what you would call diminishing returns, mm-hmm. where you can only cut so much weight where it's not going to benefit.
Yeah, totally.
It's not like when you see guys like Frankie Edgar that fought so well at 155, and he weighed 155.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see other dudes that are coming down from, you know, way, way above that. Oftentimes, like, in the high 180s. Like, Gleison Tibau, you ever see that guy in real life?
Mm-hmm.
Wait till you meet him. You're going to go down to American Top Team?
Yeah.
You're going to look at that guy and you go, how in the fuck does that guy make 155? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. He's huge. I mean, he's fucking huge. I mean, he easily could be 190. I don't know how he does it. You see him when he's getting ready to weigh in, you're like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, that's not even 155 now. He gets in the scale, it says 155, and you're like, huh? How is that possible?
Yeah. A lot of those guys, I just don't get it. I don't understand.
That's the dark secret of MMA. The dark secret of combat sports is the weight cut. It's very dangerous. You heard about that guy that just died recently, kidney failure?
No.
Yeah, amateur guy. Just died like a week or two ago. Yeah, he had kidney failure. They pulled him out, took him to the hospital. I believe he died shortly after. I want to say a day or two later. But
that's terrible.
Yeah, it's that fucking dehydration, man. It's just so dangerous.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I mean, I've had some really, really bad cuts in the past. And obviously, the performance wasn't good, but there was a couple ones where it was like walking to the weigh-in. Like, there was at Commerce Casino, there's like a long fucking stairway. And like every step, I would have to stop and like, and then take another step. It took me like 15 minutes to get up the stairs. And it was like the doctor, like, check, you know, does like the check or whatever beforehand. He's like, I'm not letting you cut another ounce if you don't make it. Usually they give you like 2 hours to make 2 more pounds or whatever. He's like, you're not cutting any more weight. And I had to like tell him, like, I'm okay. I have a nurse standing by. I'm going to get an IV. Like, I'm going to be all right. But it was really, really bad. And then, you know, you see some of these guys, which I think it was the Ultimate Fighter, where the guy was like in the back cramping and screaming, crying. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let him fight. But yeah, I don't know why people go that far for it.
It's all the wrestling, the influence of wrestling, because mm-hmm. that's always been a part of the wrestling culture. Like, if you try to wrestle at your natural weight, you're a pussy. Like what, you can't cut weight? You can't be uncomfortable? Like, wrestlers only seem to be happy when they're miserable. Like, they're happy when they're chewing ice and running upstairs. They're like Marines in a certain way. Where, like, Marines, you ever talk to Marines? They always want, like, they'll brag about how much more miserable their time was than other people's time. Like, they take pride in the fact that they can suffer and endure it. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's, you know, like, it's not easy to fucking endure misery. I guess there's a badge of courage attached to that. But when it comes to wrestling, there's like a culture of being miserable, a culture of like overtraining. Like, no one overtrains like wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a significant issue because, yeah, you get mental toughness out of it. Like, there's no one mentally tougher than wrestlers. When it comes to MMA, like, when those guys enter into MMA, they have this fucking steel determination. Like, the elite high-level wrestlers, you get it from elite high-level kickboxers as well, but it seems like there's something about that, the grind of amateur wrestling, going through high school, going through college, going through, you know, Olympic trials or whatever to do, the level of intensity in the wrestling room and the constantly dealing with being in a bad state physically, like constantly overtrained. They just develop this mindset of driving through that.
It just sounds miserable. I mean, I feel depressed while just hearing you talk about it. Like, who wants to do that shit? Yeah.
There's talk about the guy who runs the California State Athletic Commission. He wants to have people, Andy Foster, very smart guy, had a good conversation with him. He wants to talk to guys about possibly putting some sort of a limit as to how much you can gain.
After the weigh-in.
Yeah, after the weigh-in, to discourage, really bad weight cuts. Cut it to, 10 pounds, 15 pounds, whatever the fuck it is, whatever the number is. What do you think of that?
The theory is good, but then you still have the same problem as before. You get these guys that think they can cut 30 pounds, and then I'll just put on 10 more, Well, then you're still fighting dehydrated, and you're going to have the same injuries and risks. You're almost risking more now because you're not allowing them to at least get in there healthy.
Yeah, I agree. I think the real way to do it is probably to weigh someone 6 weeks out.
Yeah.
And then figure out how much you would allow them. But they would cheat then, too.
Yeah. They'd cut weight every once a week before the weigh-in. Yeah,
they would just cut a shitload of weight 6 weeks out and just lie. Mm-hmm. They'd cut 10 pounds and then you'd say, all right, you can lose 15 more. And then, no, they're cutting 25, It just seems like the other option is the day of weigh-ins, which is terrible because they'll cut weight then too.
Yeah, they'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how to fix it other than telling people it's bad for you. More people die, I guess.
Yeah, it's all just, bad. I mean, would there be a benefit of making people fight at their natural weight? Would you walk around close to 200?
Yeah, I'm about 205 right now.
And when you get into the ring, when you fight, say in Glory, will you be about 200 somewhere?
I'll be right around 200 pounds.
What about making some sort of agreement with other fighters that also are like that, like a guy like Simon? Mm-hmm. Just weigh in the day of the fight, no cutting weight.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you got to weigh. You got to weigh 200 pounds.
Yeah. Or maybe
can that
make
be done?
Make it opening. You got to be between 190 and 200. You know what I mean?
Right. But then people cut weight. Right.
Well, wouldn't they cut weight to make 200?
Yeah, but they'd be bigger. They'd bulk up to 210 and cut down. It almost seems like
there's no way to fix it, I guess.
That's a fucked up situation.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, the real issue with weight cutting when it comes to combat sports as opposed to wrestling is head trauma. Mm-hmm. Because your brain takes a while, especially when you're just ingesting fluids orally, meaning just drinking water or Pedialyte or whatever, it takes a while to get up to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
But in wrestling, that's okay because no one's kicking you in the head.
Right.
When you're in MMA or kickboxing, you got a real issue because it takes a while for it, which is why everybody likes to go with IV bags.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck. It's almost like MMA is too much. There's too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
Between all the different shit you have to do, and then also you have 5-minute rounds as opposed to 3-minute rounds of kickboxing. The wrestling, the kickboxing, the submissions, all the different variables. It's almost like you fucking can't keep up with it.
Yeah. There's a lot of shit going on there. I don't know how to fix the weight. I mean, it's got to be an issue in boxing too, no? Or we just don't talk about it?
It's not as big an issue. It's not as big an issue because the physical weight is not as big an issue. It's an issue, but it's not as big an issue as, say, a guy who can take you down and use that weight on top of you.
Right, because the weight isn't going to really help you that much.
Yeah, you see a guy like Chris Weidman who fights at 185. He does not weigh 185 right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you weighed Chris Weidman right now, he's got to be well over 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. He's a big boy. And he has a hard cut to get down to 185, and he's a UFC middleweight champion,
Mm-hmm.
So, and he fights a very, very heavy physical style, very, very aggressive, gets on top of dudes, vicious ground and pound, knows how to use his weight, and if you're not prepared to that weight, after Lyoto fought him, one of the first things Lyoto said was, I got to get stronger. Yeah. I just got to get bigger. I can't fight at this weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some people, they just gain weight easier than other people. Some guys in shape could be right around 205, but when they're out of shape, they get all the way up to 225 pounds. Me, I'm 205 to 210, period. In shape, out of shape, whatever. I'm not the type of guy that gets fat.
That's smart.
Well, it's just, I wish I could gain weight. It would be a little easier. For me to bulk up for a fight and do the weights, and I'm drinking 3,000 calorie shakes twice a day, just to try to put weight on. And I see these other guys who's that, the Bellator champion, Housley, mm-hmm. He posted a picture the other day and he was 230.
Yeah, did you see there was an article on the Underground about that guy where people are accusing him of Mexican supplements?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I forget. I don't like to engage in those things because I don't know who's telling the truth or who's not telling the truth. Anytime someone fights well, there's all immediate accusations. Like, that was one with Rafael Dos Anjos after he beat Pettis. Like, everybody was saying, oh, he's got to be on something. He's got to be on something. Like, look at him. He's got to be on something.
I just think anybody that does well, they're going to say that, you know. And then, like, who's saying it? It's the fans. The Bellator posted a picture of me after I knocked out Melvin and a picture when I was 17 years old training, right? And all the comments were like, PEDs. Like, since I was 17? Like, really? I can't believe he looks different than when he was 17. So.
Yeah, that's weird, dude. Yeah. You got older and you look different?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Strange as fuck. Dos Anjos looks exactly the same, too. That's why it's so stupid that everybody's accusing him. Doesn't mean he couldn't possibly have been on something, but, you know, he's training with one of the disciples of Marv Marinovich. Do you know the Marv?
Really?
Yeah. He's training with this guy, Nick Curson, who's going to be on the podcast in a couple of weeks. I'm very excited to interview that guy. And he's got some pretty radical training methods that he learned from Marv Marinovich.
Because I heard them talk about him when BJ used him, right?
Mm-hmm.
A couple years back.
Yeah, and this guy has the same sort of training methods. I really can't wait to interview him and talk to him about these methods. But
that's interesting.
Yeah, because Dos Anjos was in insane shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pace that he put on Pettis, and he didn't have any holes. I mean, there was nothing. His striking was on point. His grappling was insane. His cardio was insane. I mean, he just covered all the bases, dotted all his I's, checked all his T's. It was that was impressive as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find out what this guy's doing.
Yeah,
because I always wonder, like, how much of a training camp, and this is particularly important, I guess, in MMA. How much of a training camp should be dedicated to strength and conditioning, mm-hmm. and how much should be dedicated to skill work?
You know, for me, for Last Man Standing, I had a 6 months notice or something for the fight, and my fight before that was with Wayne Barrett in New York, and I just felt physically too small when I fought him. I mean, that was the first time in my career where the guy that I weighed in against and the guy I got in the ring with were like two different people. And it really bothered me mentally. And, like, there were shots that he would hit me with that, like, didn't even land, but he, like, hit me in the forearm, and he'd be, like, pushing me across the ring, and I really felt, like, too small. And, you know, I hit the weights, and I was doing the high-calorie things or whatever, and I did the weights for a long, long period of time. And then my coach stopped me about six weeks out from the fight and was like, okay, no more weights. Now you have to get your... Because I was, you know, stiff, and, you know, if you lift weights, so...
You're sore all the time, right?
Yeah, you're just sore, and every time you're building muscle, you're making it tighter and tighter and tighter. And, mm-hmm. you know, for speed, for kickboxing especially, and boxing, it's about technique and being loose and snap more so than, like, punching hard and pushing.
The economy of movement, too, right? You got to be able to be loose and...
Yeah, it's about getting that punch to snap at the end and not trying to push through.
Right.
And, you know, I had a really good result with that camp, and I felt like I was hitting harder. Obviously, it knocked out Simon, you know, so it was good. But, like, now when I'm fighting so actively, it's like I don't really have time to hit the weights and, like, bulk up or, like, get that tight again, you know. Mm. So that's been an issue for me when you're fighting so consistently. I'm sure that, you know, I'd be interested to see what Donald Cerrone does when he's fighting so often, you know, if he has time. Because for me, it was like, okay, get right back into camp. You're right back where you are, like, the last... You know, 5 weeks you're running all the time, you're trying to get your speed and your agility, but there's not a whole lot of strength training going on.
Yeah, I talked to Diego Sanchez about that, and Diego, the way he would prepare for a fight.
Yes! Yes!
He'd just pull out a cross and just start fucking screaming, yes.
I didn't see that. Somebody told me about that the other day.
You never seen it?
And I'm like, what the fuck
Jamie,
are you talking
pull this
about?
Up. You got to see
oh
this.
Oh my God. He I just came saw out. It the other day. And I was like, are you. He was telling me about it. I didn't believe him. And then I YouTubed and I was like, holy shit. That's some.
There's not a motherfucker something. Alive who believes in himself more than Diego Sanchez. I mean, you might believe in yourself as much, but you are at 100%. You're at 100% belief.
Yeah.
That motherfucker believes
in himself. I mean, I had
seen himself.
It when he was, like, walking out yelling yes or whatever, but I hadn't seen where he, like, pulled out the cross and was, like, fighting demons on the way to the ring. That was fucking crazy.
It was one of the greatest moments I've ever seen
belief
in my life.
Or what that is. That
it's
was
a lot
something.
Of things, man.
That was something.
It's a lot of things. No, this is just a yes one. This is great.
Yeah.
I saw but he's like, Diego's an interesting cat because he's like, he's very big on yoga. He's very big on sensory deprivation tanks. Like, we talked in depth about sensory deprivation. Find it. He's got, maybe it's the craziest one. Is it, say, craziest Diego Sanchez? That's very subjective, though. All of his walk-ins are crazy. He's got a hood
or some shit, and he's like fucking fighting demons on the way to the ring.
It looks like some sort of a monk.
Yeah,
he's a big fan of optimizing everything he's got, including his mental state. Like, he's really into like positive affirmations and positive thinking. Yeah, here it is.
Yeah, this one.
Yeah. So as he walks out. Like, as he starts walking out towards the, like, I'm pretty sure this is it.
I got something for him. Like, he's, like, hiding it or something. And then, bam.
Yeah, there it is. Here's a fucking cross. Look at this. Oh. See, I wasn't calling this fight, I don't believe. I believe I was watching it at home, so I got a chance to laugh. I mean, laugh really hard.
That's something right there. That's...
If I was seeing this... Yeah, it's Kenny Florian talking. If I was there live, I most certainly would have started laughing.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that Diego, what he does before camps, is he would do only strength and conditioning. No fitness, no striking training, no grappling training, no nothing. Everything he would do leading up to his camp would be like weightlifting, running, mm-hmm. like all physical shit. Just get his body to the peak of condition. Then... he would start to taper off of that and then go into his skill set training.
Right.
So they would do it like when he would actually do his 6 weeks for camp, his 6 weeks would be all wrestling, all striking, all jiu-jitsu.
Right. That's ideally what I would do, except now it's like I only have 6 weeks between a fight. You know right. what I mean? So I don't really have time to do that right now.
He brought in Steve Maxwell for his BJ Penn fight. And, you know, it was interesting because Steve said it would almost be better if I didn't train him. Because Steve was like, because if I didn't train him, he wouldn't be in as good a shape, and there would have been like a quicker fight. Like, he was outclassed in that fight. Like, BJ was just lighting him up. Mm-hmm. And because he was in such good shape, he was able to take a tremendous amount of punishment. Mm-hmm. I mean, BJ dropped him just a couple minutes or so into the first round and then just battered him for the rest of the fight until he eventually cut him with that head kick and stopped him.
It's interesting, too, because I've heard, and I kind of believe it, is that your chin is improved with the better shape you're in.
Yeah.
You heard that before? Like, you
know, I would imagine.
I wonder why that is, though.
Well, I think that when you're tired, you're weak, you know? I mean, I remember I fought in a kickboxing tournament. It was in Rhode Island, above the waist kickboxing, mm-hmm. the old school mm-hmm. days.
I PK, saw somebody karate posted style. one of your spinning heel kick knockouts.
Yeah,
not too long ago. That's pretty cool.
That was a Taekwondo tournament, but in the kickboxing tournament, I fought three times in one night, and I won the first fight by knockout. I beat the shit out of the second guy, and then I had a long wait, like an hour plus for the third fight, and I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in the best of shape. Wasn't that smart back then. Wasn't eating very good. And I was really tired after the first round of this fight. And this guy hit me with a punch that really wasn't that big of a punch. Like, I remember seeing it on video. He hit me with a left hook, and my legs just went, take care.
Yeah.
We'll see you later. They just stopped working. And like, I'm like, any other time I'd be able to take that punch. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It wasn't, like, sometimes you see a punch and you see your head snap back and you go, God damn. Mm-hmm. Like, you got cracked. But this wasn't that. It was just my body just was exhausted. And if I was in better shape, I know I would have been able to take that better. Mm-hmm. And you see guys that are in really good shape, and it's very rare that they can't recover from a couple hard shots. Whereas it seems like everything is based on your vitality. And if your body is in really good condition, you can bounce back from things quicker. Like Frankie Edgar is another perfect example. I think a lot of it you have to chalk off to heart and will and determination. Mm-hmm. You know, like some guys like Frankie just has this fucking incredible will. Like you can't, like he's like a dude who's a little dude who people have been fucking with him
his whole
since
life. He was this little guy.
He ain't having it.
Yeah.
You know, he's gonna fucking kick your ass. It doesn't matter how hard you hit him. He's eventually gonna, if all fights went to 100 rounds, Frankie Edgar would never lose.
Yeah.
He would just keep going and keep going and keep going. Eventually, you get it tired, and he would beat your ass. But I think one of the ways he could absorb the kind of punishment that he could absorb, like against Gray Maynard, remember those fights? fucking insane, two insane first rounds where Gray had him out in both fights. Gray cracked him. I mean, he's wobbling. A lot of referees would have stopped the fight. He's going down 2-3 times in the first round, just getting wobbled, blood, face swelling. Second round, he comes out and he wins a round. You know, how's he doing it? Well, he's doing just insane shape. His cardio is just so fucking good. He can take it. He bounces back from it. He recovers quickly. And then his cardio is so good that in the second round, he's back again.
Well, then it's like the guys that lose their chin. Are they just not in good shape anymore? Or is it
gone? It's a punishment issue. I think it's, you know.
It's weird.
We've all seen it. Guys in the gym that have a certain amount of times you can punch that card until it's like it's over. Just doesn't work anymore. Chuck described it to me once, and he said the way it was described to him is that the doctor was telling him that at a certain point in time, your brain recognizes that you're too tough for your own good. So your brain knows when it gets tagged, oh, this fucking dude is just going to start absorbing punches again, and we're going to have to deal with all this damage. Let's just shut off.
Right. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. But last time this happened, we just took a little nap and everything was fine. Let's just do that again.
Yeah, you know? Let's just take a little nap.
Let's just like, fuck this guy. Just
this asshole wants us to go eat punches.
Joe's doing this shit again. Fuck you,
click.
Joe.
You gotta wonder, like, what is that? When that time is, you know, like when do you know? Well, most fighters think, like, you know what, if I just have one more camp, and maybe I'll do 8 weeks instead of 6 weeks, and maybe I'll clean my diet up, and maybe I'll bring in a guy to work with me, maybe on my defense a little bit more, and maybe my strength and conditioning could be better, that improve everything. And
I mean, you got to know in the camp, though. I mean, if you're getting knocked out in sparring regularly, you know, if that's happening, like, that's never happened to me in sparring, but, like, if that's a thing that happens in the gym, like, how much confidence can you really have when you're walking to the ring? Like,
right.
2 weeks ago, I got knocked out. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
So.
That's a regular occurrence. Regular occurrence in MMA. Forrest Griffin, when he fought Anderson, he got knocked out apparently twice. Yeah. And you've seen the Marvin Eastman-Travis Luter fight?
Yeah.
That was when Marvin got hit with this very strange punch. It was like, it was a decent punch, but it was like at the very end of the punch, and he just went out like he got shot.
Oh, right.
And I remember thinking, wow, like, that's kind of crazy. Then we found out afterwards he got knocked out twice in camp, like really recently. Like, Tito had knocked him out with a knee, and then someone had knocked him out. He got knocked out with like a takedown attempt or something like that. Like, it was like two in a row. So, like, one didn't really recover from that, went back in, got another one.
See, that's the other thing. It's like, if... Is there just a number, or is it like this guy got knocked out and it didn't do the right things, didn't do the hyperbaric chamber, just didn't take time off? You know what I mean?
Do you do that, hyperbaric chamber?
I've done it before, and I did. I do like the altitude tents. I have one in my house.
Oh, yeah, you sleep in that?
Yeah.
Do you get your lady to sleep in there with you?
Yeah, she's not a big fan. She sleeps there. It's like a giant tent, and you know, our nightstands and bed and everything fits in there. She just can't stand, like, the smell of it because it smells like you're sleeping in a tent. You know, it's like
vinyl. Yeah. I remember BJ Penn in one of the countdown shows. He goes, when you're going to sleep in a big plastic tent, you know someone's going to get their ass kicked. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of fucked up, right? Like, sleeping in a big plastic tent just to... But that's the only way to mimic it. They say that's actually the best way. That's actually even better than training at altitude. Mm-hmm. Because training at altitude kind of limits your workload.
Right.
Whereas you really want the recovery.
There's this place in Costa Mesa that we used to go to before I got this tent. And I probably will start going back to it because it was really good. It's called Ascent. And the product is called CVAC. And it's this altitude chamber that... it looks like a jet plane cockpit. Ian uses it a lot.
Yeah,
too.
Ian McCall. Yeah,
it was a design by the guy that invented the MRI machine, and it's actually the purpose behind it was to like cure diabetes or treat diabetes with circulation problems or something. But they can't. They're in the process of getting it licensed or whatever to where they could was approved by the FDA or
diabetes,
whatever.
Diabetes, huh?
Yeah, something wow. about they get people that have like you know people have diabetes. Their feet turn purple because they're fucking.
Blood
flows all fucked up. They put people on this machine, and they'll like after a couple treatments, like their feet get regular color again. But the way it works is it's it takes you to way higher altitude than, like, my at home goes to like 16,000 feet. This will go all the way to like 33,000 feet or some shit.
Like Everest.
Like Everest. And it goes up and down. So, like, in a 20-minute session, it goes, you know, based on what program it is, like maybe Everest to back down to zero, like 100 times in 20 minutes. So like, while you're in there, it's constantly dropping. The pressure's filling up and dropping because the guy found that your body goes through more of a metabolic change during the change of altitude as opposed to like what we've known is you go and you stay there for 8 hours or however long and then you come back down to train. So this is constantly going up and down, up and down, up and down, and your body's like, what the fuck, what the fuck? And that's supposed to create more red blood cells or circulation.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get one of those for a gym?
You can. They have, I think there's like 15 in the U.S.
Really?
Like crazy expensive, I'm sure. But
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, I think you could definitely do that. You could hit up Ascent.
There it is.
Costa Mesa, yeah.
Demo and say, is there a demo for this? They have a video, Jamie?
Yeah, probably.
That looks like you're gonna launch into the fucking universe in that thing.
A lot of fighters use it. A lot of triathletes are using it down there. It's really good stuff. I just stopped doing it because it was so, with my schedule and training here and there and everywhere else, driving all the way to Costa Mesa and back every day was tough.
But if you had one in the yard, though, you'd probably jump in that pitch every day.
Every
right?
day, I'd sleep in that thing.
Crank this up, Jamie. Let me hear this. It's I want to hear what they have to say.
Creating lower pressure and thinner air. Just like you get on a day of skiing up in Aspen.
Athletes get an increase in VO2 max, peripheral vision, quicker reaction,
whoa,
endurance, power.
The CVAC people say the body's response is to increase its blood volume, but that they still haven't studied the effects enough to say for sure. I decided to get into the thing and try out a typical session.
Am I going to get injured in this thing?
Pussy. Get in there.
Like your ears will pop like shit. Like it
really?
Fucking hurts. Like you have to get, it takes like 4 or 5 sessions to get used to it.
Wow.
But yeah, my coach would notice a big difference. And like the biggest difference that I noticed from that, from using the altitude tent, was like the fog of like sparring or being in a fight. Like all of the, everything kind of slowed down. Like it just seemed like more focused. I'd find myself like checking out the guy's tattoos instead of being like, you know, and like my coach would notice a big difference, like 2 sessions in there. And he'd be like, you've been using that machine, huh? And I'm like, yeah.
Really? Wow.
Cause I mean, as a smoker, Joe, I got to take every, you know, I got to do everything I can. So that was regular part of like 6 or 7 of my fights. I was going down there.
No shit, man.
Yeah.
You got to get back in there, dude.
Yeah, I really do.
We got to look at these. His ears are popping.
Yeah, so you're constantly in there just popping your ears, popping your ears, popping your ears.
Oh,
yeah,
look at
this is fucking cool. The fucking cap, it'll crush. The
whoa,
fucking cap will go shooting off.
The water bottle just like a gorilla smushed it.
Say they've used the pod and believe it helps. Some university research has been done.
What I literally loved about it is there was only like 12, I think, in the U.S. So like, I knew when I was in there that my opponent wasn't using that shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, this is...
That's what people feel like
secret
when they do
weapon.
Steroids.
Essentially, yeah.
Did we talk about the cryo chamber last time you were
yeah,
there?
Yeah, you referred me. I went down to it one day.
Yeah?
It was cool. It was real cool.
There's one
cold.
Out here now.
Oh, yeah.
There's one right down the street.
You're
yeah,
fucking
Woodland
living
Mills.
In that shit. How many times today have you been in there?
I haven't been yet.
Yeah?
It just opened. It hasn't even had like a hard opening yet. They just done a soft opening.
Oh, yeah.
Same company, though. Cryo Healthcare. That's where you went, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It was really cool. It was really cool.
Cold as fuck, but when you get out, don't you feel like you can jump over the moon?
Yeah, it was like fucking... I tried to describe it in text, and I was like, that didn't sound fucking right at all. But like when you're in there, and I would like take a deep breath, it's almost like a head rush. Like the
mm-hmm.
fucking cold air going in, it was almost like a whip it. It was cool. The whole thing was fucking cool. It was cool. Next on my list, I want to try one of those... the float labs.
Tell me when. You
yeah?
tell me when. Man, you can use mine at my house.
Yeah.
Come on over, dude. You tell me when.
All right. Whenever you're free.
Well, listen, let's set up a date soon and come on over to the house. You can have dinner. And
okay.
then I'll leave you down there for a few hours.
Cool.
And come on up and you'll freak out.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
What is, I mean, my buddy told me about it and it's like a hallucinogenic kind of thing. Or?
Well, sort of.
And then I've heard people like using it for training. So
yeah. What's great for training, you know, it's great for problem solving too. I use it for like, if I have a joke that I'm working on, that's not working well,
mm-hmm.
I'll go in there and I'll sort it out. I'm like, oh, fuck, it's gotta be an angle for this joke. Like I can sit down and look at a keyboard and maybe think about it. But I feel like my mind has more resources when I'm in the tank. And the reason being is that the idea of the sensory deprivation tank was created by this guy named John Lilly. John Lilly was this really nutty dude. He was a psychedelic pioneer, esteemed professor and intellectual, was a pioneer in interspecies communication, did a lot of research with dolphin communication, did a lot of drugs, and a lot of LSD, a lot of ketamine. And one of his things was he was trying to figure out how to separate the mind from the influence of the body. Mm-hmm. He was thinking that there's like, oh, my neck hurts, like, oh, I got a fart, you know, like all these different things that are going on in your body that are distracting the mind. Mm-hmm. How could I get away from that? And he came up with a bunch of different solutions. One of them was, you've seen that movie Altered States? Mm-hmm. You ever seen that movie? It's really stupid, man. It was great in the 80s when I saw it. When I was a kid, I was like, this movie's great. And it's one of the movies you watch again when you're 40. You go, what the fuck? This movie's a piece of shit. So many movies don't hold up, yeah. Man. It's weird.
No.
It's one of them. It does not hold up. But it was based on John Lilly.
That's how all the Van Damme movies were.
Like, oh,
when
yeah.
When I was like, Kickboxer, like, changed my life, you know? And I saw it a couple months ago, and I was like, what the fuck?
That's so true. Have you seen that little kid, before we get into the sensory deprivation tank, have you seen that little kid doing the Bruce Lee nunchuck scene?
Yeah, I saw that.
Holy
shit. Fucking amazing.
Shit.
Like 4 years old.
Pull this up. We got to watch this. Look at this little kid. He's wearing a Bruce Lee outfit from the Game of Death, and he's got nunchucks just like Bruce Lee's, and he's doing it in sync to Bruce Lee behind him. Like
the little one. That's the best part right
there.
Look
at the walk! He's doing the total nunchuck move, skillful as fuck. He's 5 years old.
That's so awesome.
He's doing everything exactly the way Bruce is doing it on the screen behind him.
So cool. So cool.
This is amazing. It's so good. Like, first of all, this kid definitely can't read yet.
Mm.
Right?
No.
He's five.
No.
He probably hasn't even been to school yet. Maybe a little bit of kindergarten, you know?
Yeah, pre-K, maybe.
So he's got no information in his head other than this Bruce Lee scene. That's the key.
That's the key. And, like, you know, and by the time that kid's 12, there will be 500 people in his life that tell him to be realistic and, like, shoot down every imaginative thing that he has in his fucking head. My kids just, I love this. This makes me really happy when I see that.
Yeah, me too, man. Dana White posted this video the other day of a little girl hitting the mitts.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can find that video on Dana White's Instagram. It's this little girl. She looks like she's maybe like 6 or 7 years old, and she's hitting the mitts, and fucking technique is on point. She's blocking and rolling, and, you know, no kicks, just punches, but, like, god damn.
I remember when that Tap Out commercial came out a couple years ago, and they had those two kids, the two little boys, where they were doing all that shit.
Dude.
This is the future.
Here's the video. Watch this little girl.
Oh,
this
I saw this, yeah. Dope.
I mean, come on, man. This is fucking badass. Look at the technique. Look at her footwork, the movement. Look at the fucking ducking. Come on, man. Every time she's throwing these punches, her hands are in the right position.
That's impressive.
I'm so impressed with this.
That's impressive.
That girl's going to grow up to be a psycho. You don't want to date her.
Yeah,
but
no. Don't date that one.
Somehow
there needs to be some level of where the fight should stop, and you're like, okay, just, you know, I don't want the girl to be able to, like, take it to the next level. You're arguing, and then she starts beating your ass, like, that's not cool.
Yeah, like, if you're dating Ronda Rousey and she mounts you, you're like, oh, listen, bitch, you gotta get off me. Leave my arm alone. So the sensory deprivation tank, get back to that, the way he first did it was like a scuba helmet. He came up with a way to hook up a scuba helmet with, like, these underarm harnesses so that you're suspended by the air in the scuba helmet, and, you know, kind of like floats your body. And then eventually you forget about the scuba helmet. And then somewhere along the lines, he realized that if you just had water that was filled with salt, that you would just float in it, sort of like the Dead Sea. You ever see those videos of the people that go to the Dead Sea?
No, I've heard about this. I'm hoping you explain it to me. So you float on the salt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's packed full of salt, but the salt, like, is buoyant?
The salt is, as long as you continue to cycle the water, my pump goes on every morning. It's on a timer. So, like, at 5 o'clock in the morning, like, sometimes I'm up real early and I'll hear coming down from the basement, and that's the pump kicking on automatically. And the water cycles through this series of filters, these huge spa filters with, like, the way that guy crashed down at the float lab in Venice is a mad genius. This guy has done, like, when he first came around, I found out about him through a guy who used to repair tanks for this company called Samadhi. Samadhi is the first company that I bought a tank from, and they were actually in business with Lilly. Lilly's first tank, one of his first tanks, was a Samadhi, and he kind of taught them how to put it together and manufacture it. And then this guy, Crash, he's just crazy, and he's just very technically oriented, and he just took it to a totally new level. He uses ozone to filter out the water, and he has oxygen pumped into the chamber. He made the chamber walls real thick and insulated, so it retains heat, no sound. It keeps the heat stable, and they're much tall. His tanks are 7 feet tall and 6 feet wide and 9 feet long. I mean, he's a master. The guy just figured it out. And so this pump kicks on, and it goes through all the water, cycles all the water, so the water doesn't crystallize. Because if you let it sit, the salt will eventually crystallize. And then I've done that before. Accidentally, the power kicked off, and I didn't know about it. Like a circuit blew, mm-hmm. and I had these rocks, these giant like crystals in the water, just because the salt had sort of congealed because there was no heat in it anymore to keep it warm. Mm-hmm. But as long as the water keeps cycling, and as long as the water stays at a high temperature, which is around, you want to keep it, mine's at 94 degrees, which is about the same as the surface of your skin.
Oh, okay.
So then when you lie in it, you don't feel the water really, because the water is the same temperature as your skin. That's the goal. If it's too hot, you'll start to sweat. If it's too cold, you'll feel cold. But if you get it just in that Goldilocks zone, then once you relax, you don't feel the water. And half of your body, like if you cut a person in half from the top of their head, like mm-hmm. sideways, like everything above your nipples is like, that's what it looks like right there. Perfect example.
Huh.
So in this image that we're looking at right here, this guy's floating in the water, and it's just because of the salt. Mine's a little bit bigger than this tank, so mine has 1,000 pounds of salt in it. It's all Epsom salts too, which is really good for your body. Like when I'm real sore, I take Epsom salt baths. They're great for you.
It's something about the amount of salt in your body, or
magnesium.
Yeah, because we use it to cut weight sometimes too.
Yeah, like
the last couple ounces or pounds that you can't get out.
Also, if you drink it in water, you will shoot diarrhea out of your asshole in a way that you've probably never experienced in your life. It's like a way of
it's not really
purging.
On my top 10 list of things I need to do, but all right.
Well, people do
if
it.
If you're bored, you could shoot diarrhea out of your ass like nobody's business.
It's like a way to do an enema.
Yeah.
You drink a little bit of, I mean, it's not much, either like a couple of tablespoons in a glass of water, and you just, you just run to that bathroom. But something about that salt just gets in there and scrubs the inside of your colon and anything that's stuck.
That's got to be pretty healthy, actually.
Maybe not.
Could be not good at all.
Have you done a colonic?
Mm.
Yeah, I haven't either.
No.
I don't know about that. Like, I hear mixed things. I hear it's real. I'm sure people on Twitter will tell me now about how great it is or how awful it is.
There's another thing. Somebody did that for the Ultimate Fighter to cut weight on one of the episodes.
Oh, that was Gabe Rudiger.
Yeah, Rudiger.
Yeah, he just probably wanted something up his ass.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
No, I'm just kidding, Gabe. It's supposed to be good for you in some ways. No, he's not.
Before we went on the show, before we started, Joe Rogan was talking about you, Gabe. He said that you're into shit like that. I'm just putting it out there.
I didn't say that. I'm just making shit up. If you're gay, if you're into things in your ass, some dudes are straight as fuck. They just like things in their ass. It's up to you, folks. It's all on you. It's okay. No judgment. But the colonic thing, I have a friend who did it, and he said, dude, it's like the fucking pianos were coming out of my ass. He goes, I was finding things that I ate when I was a kid. He said there was a pipe that was coming out, like, you know, that's attached, and you could see all the things that were coming out of your ass. And the lady was pointing out his diet, and she was like, you know, oh, you need more fiber. And he's like, those fucking tree trunks are coming out of his ass, and bark and tennis balls. He said, it's just ridiculous. And you're looking through a tube at this water with all the, you know, the particles.
How much weight did he drop? Does he know?
I don't think Gabe got. That's the thing about taking a shit. Shits don't weigh that much.
No.
Piss is way heavier.
Yeah.
Like, if you have to take a leak to gain weight, like, we learned that in wrestling. Like, a guy took a shit, and he was like, dude, I just took a massive shit. I bet he lost a pound.
No.
It looks like an ounce.
Yeah.
Shit is not heavy for some strange reason.
But, like, if you're sick and you have diarrhea or whatever, like, you'll end up, dehydrated like a motherfucker. You drop a lot of weight.
That's dangerous.
Yeah,
that's one of the ways people die from dehydration. One of the primary ways people die from dehydration is diarrhea. It's very dangerous. Like certain diseases where people just get massive diarrhea that winds up, it's one of the causes of death. It's because your body just gets so dehydrated, your electrolytes drop so low, your heart function doesn't work properly.
It's a shitty conversation.
It's a very shitty conversation. He had a big smile on his face before he said that.
I knew it.
He was setting it up.
I saw it coming.
So
it's a float lab.
The float lab. What the tank does is, first of all, it's real relaxing. Like your muscles loosen up because you're floating. You're like in that no gravity state, like you saw in that picture. Everything is like, nothing's pulling on it. Like even here when we're sitting here, you know, your gravity's pulling down your spine. And there, everything seems to like lengthen up and relax. And when I get out of it, I feel so loose. I just feel just relaxed. And the magnesium, the salt absorbs into your skin, and it's Epsom salt, so it's an excellent source of magnesium, really healthy for your body, for muscle growth and development. And when you're in there, you don't have any influence of your body. Like you're not sometimes you get like an itch, but that's really just your body fucking with you because your body's like, hey, there's nothing going on here. I don't feel anything. My nose itches. And you're like,
you start telling yourself, that's your mind fucking with you.
Yeah, you're like, you just start, don't scratch, whatever you do.
But so the idea is that, like, someone told me that it simulates the same feeling as being in the womb or something?
Yeah, I've heard that too. I wonder. But if your mother's yelling at your father and smoking cigarettes, I bet it's different. Huh. I think that what it does is it gives you a relaxation state that's unachievable without the tank because there's nothing touch. It's an environment that is completely alien to the earth. When you lie in that thing, you literally don't see anything, you don't feel anything, and you're floating, which means you feel like you're weightless. You feel like you're flying. It gives you the impression of moving through space, like you're flying through space. It's real weird.
Right when you get in there, do you feel like different, or is there like a panic that happens, or like, you know? Like,
you can. Some people get a little claustrophobic, but you just got to relax. Nothing's going to happen. It's just like laying on the ground. Mm-hmm. It's just the door. The door doesn't have a latch. You just push it. It opens up easy. You know? I've done it so many times, I don't have the panic feeling anymore, but there's a weirdness to it, definitely. Yeah. You climb in there. And I always squeegee it because there's always like a little bit of condensation on the roof, the inside ceiling of the tank. So I squeegee that away. Otherwise, it'll drip down your face while you're in there, which is annoying. And then once I'm done squeegeeing it, I shut the door. I go, here we go. And I just lay back and float. Yeah. And you will definitely, once you do it for a while, you will definitely have trippy experiences in there. You definitely have like some sort of strange psychedelic experiences that happen, but also real good for sorting out things. Like say if you're like, man, I got to get my shit together. I'm gonna go in there and think about my life. Mm-hmm. You'll go in there and you'll go, you know, I got to stop doing this, or I got to stop hanging around with this person, or I got to do more of that, or I'm slacking off in this area. Like it's almost like a seminar on your life. Mm-hmm. And if I have like jujitsu moves, it's great for jujitsu moves. Like I'll drill jujitsu moves in my mind. And the way I'll do it is I'll lie in the tank and I'll go over positions as if they're happening in real life. Like I'll start off slow and like, you know, like if you were doing like flow drilling or something like that, like I'll start off, like I'll like say, for instance, I'll do like a half guard sweep. Like I'll start off in half guard. I'll scoop my hips this side. I'll fight for the underhook. I'll get the grip. I'll pull the guy in, I'll trip the leg up, I sweep, I get on top. And then I'll do it as if it was a drill, like if you're performing a drill, but I'll do it all completely in my head, and I'll go over the motions first slowly, and then I'll do it fast. And then I'll go over, and then I'll do it like, I'll recreate like the violence of it, like the explosion of it in my head. I'll recreate the resistance. And then once I get like one drill down, then I'll have counters to the drill. Like I'll go into it, but I'll lose the position. And now I have to, you know, reestablish another position. And when you do that, like that kind of mental training really shows up in the gym. Like it really recreates in the gym. And I would imagine to be the same with striking. I would imagine to be the same with tennis, with anything. I think they've shown that recreation and visualization is as much of a factor in the development and growth as actual training is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I
Do you do stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm into that stuff a lot.
Well, I know you're working with Vinny Shorman now, right?
Yeah.
Vinny's going to come on the podcast. I've been talking to Ian about it. We're going to work this out.
Yeah, he's coming to in June. He's going to be here for a couple weeks doing like seminars and stuff. So
yeah, you were saying the last time you were here that he helped you.
Yeah.
That, like, what do you guys do? Like, and how often do you do it?
We've done a lot of stuff. And then now it's like it seems to be every time I talk to him, it's like a new thing that he comes up with. He's helped me so much in my life that's not even – I don't even know if it's even about fighting anymore. It's just stuff that he's – he's done hypnosis on me. He's got me to the point now where it's we call it trance. It's not even hypnosis. But, like, he can start talking to me a certain way, and I'm already in a different thing. And when I get off the phone with him, my mind's just going insane based off the conversations we had.
It's really?
It's really weird. It's an amazing guy. Really good guy.
I can't wait to talk to him. The mind is a motherfucker, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. So that stuff you were just talking about right now is it's really interesting to me. I've done that with my fights, watching a fight. You know, if, how do I explain it? Even like blocking leg kicks, when you can visualize it happening and your reaction to it, in your head without actually seeing it or without actually doing it, I think it plays it out to be so real. Is a good example. So one thing we do is I'll focus when I sign a fighter, we get booked for a certain date about 4 or 5 weeks out. All the time when I wake up in the morning, when I'm sitting on the toilet, anytime I'm alone, I'll think about 15 minutes after I've won the fight. 15 minutes after, I'm thinking as high def as possible. When the first time I'm doing it, it's not very high def. By the end, it's like it's so real. I can smell the room. I can feel the chair I'm sitting in. I can see the my coach's faces, who else is in there, what they're saying to me, how I feel about myself. And the idea behind it is if you focus on 15 minutes after you've won and you do it over a period of time, it becomes so real in your head that it's like it already happened. And if it's already happened, how could you possibly have anxiety about something that your mind thinks already happened,
Whoa.
Does that make sense?
But so is there a possibility that, that feeling that you get, I don't know if you've experienced this, you probably have, where you didn't get up for a fight because you thought that you were going to kick this guy's ass pretty easy, so you weren't nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you got in there, you felt like off, like you weren't performing the way like you would be, like say if you fought a guy like Artem Levin,
mm-hmm.
who top of the food chain, you're going to be on your toes, mm-hmm. you're going to be ready. Whereas you're going in there, you're like, I'm going to kick this fucking guy's ass. Mm-hmm. And you go in there and it just seems like, damn, like this is not, I'm not firing right. It's mm-hmm. not, is that possible?
Yeah. I mean,
alleviation of anxiety is like a negative in some way.
I don't know about that. No. I think that it could be. I think that what you're talking about is something that Vinny's ultimately helped me with a lot.
Yeah.
Because my problem is one of my problems, that's so many problems. one big problem is I always do poorly in that situation. When I'm the favorite, I have a hard time. It's not that I don't train hard for it. It's just something about, I'm that guy that rises to the occasion. The three fights in one night where it's, it's three rematches and two guys beat you. And that's when I do really well. It's
right.
When no one expects you to win is when I really rise to the occasion. When people start telling me that it's an easy fight or that it's, I'm the favorite or whatever, I really try and shut that out and try and convince myself that, he's going to kill me and he's a really bad guy. I don't know if it's about not getting up for the fight or if it's, you just take the guy lightly or what it is. But I've always had issues with that in the past.
A lot of people have issues with that. Taking a guy lightly is a huge problem, and it's real common. And you see it in a fight, like maybe when a guy's the favorite. Like, I'm not necessarily saying that this was the case in the Cub Swanson-Max Holloway fight. Did you see that fight?
Mm-hmm.
Great fucking fight. Max Holloway, man, that motherfucker looked good in that fight. God damn, it was an amazing performance by Holloway. But Cub Swanson was a big favorite leading into that fight, and he just couldn't get off. Just did not seem like he could get off. And I think there was probably a few issues with the way he was training. He was doing a lot of boxing-specific training, and mm-hmm. he even had a famous boxing coach forget his name, Diaz, in his corner.
Pedro Diaz?
Yeah. No, that's the guy from Miami.
Yeah.
No, this is the guy that trains Tim Bradley. He works with a lot of, I forget, doesn't matter. Point is, the guy was giving him like boxing instruction in the corner, and I'm like, he's dealing with a guy that's kicking him,
yeah,
throwing elbows and flying knees and spinning back kicks his way. Like, what the, you know, like, this is, you got the wrong guy here, man. Mm-hmm. You need a fucking Matt Hume type character that's telling you like MMA specific shit to do. So there's probably some technical issues with the way he approached the fight, but also it just didn't seem like, if you saw him against like other fighters, like Jeremy Stevens, who's a fucking murderer, you know, he's a murderer, he's fighting another murderer, these two guys are dangerous as fuck, you know, he is sharp as shit, because it's just deadly, dangerous fight. Whereas Max Holloway, you know, he had beaten some real good guys, but he was thought to be like a notch below Cub, and Cub just couldn't fucking put it together. And you got to say, well, it was definitely a case of Holloway rising to the occasion, fought better than he ever fought before. You can't take nothing away from him. But when you look at Cub, just didn't look right. Just couldn't. And you got to wonder how much of that is him coming into that fight as a prohibitive favorite. Like, I think he was like 3-4 to 1 favorite.
Well, it's like one guy is, you know, This is my big shot. This is everything. You know, he's focused on it like 100%. The other guy's like, oh, this is another fight. You know, it's still a serious fight. I still got to take it seriously. But the other guy is like going for greatness, and you're, you know, it's a weird balancing act. You know, so much of fighting is mental. You can have a phenomenal camp, and that last 2 hours before you walk out there, it can blow it all. You know, so that's why I work with Vinny, and you know, we're always finding new things to work on, and you know, I'm far from perfect, but I feel like my game has come a long way since I started working with him.
Yeah, I really think we discussed this. I really think that mental coach is going to be just as important as having a striking coach, just as important as having a grappling coach. I mean, you're going to have a mental coach. It's going to be just like you have guys have strength and conditioning guys, you know, that they work with on a regular basis. You're going to have some sort of a mental coach that you work with on a regular basis.
I think it's going to be a really, you know, it's going to be the next big thing here pretty soon.
I think so, too.
I hope it doesn't, though. I hope I stick to, you know, just me. No one else uses it.
Well, I would wonder if someone could do it where they have a microphone that pumps into a tank, where you lie in the sensory deprivation tank and it's mic'd up, which would be very easy to do. Mm-hmm. And as you're lying in there, like Crash has developed this system where he actually has a screen that's in front of you as you lie down. So as you're floating, the screen is floating above your head, and it's so low in its light emissions that you can't see the edge. You don't see the border of the screen. You just see the images. Wow. But because you're in an environment that has no light in it at all, other than the screen, it's like these images are floating in the sky in front of your face. And in doing so, he believes because you have no distractions, like no physical distractions, you're not feeling the weight, you're not feeling gravity, you're not feeling sensory input, you're not judging space around you, you're just getting the images, you'll learn things quicker because your body will have no resources that it's demanding of the mind.
What's on the screen?
Different documentaries, different instructionals. Like he's got one that they're working with. I think his idea is that like sports specific stuff, like golf, like that you would absorb like information, like how like the rotation of the hips, and you know, especially doing things from a first person perspective. And showing.
I'm just gonna lay in there and do like straight BJJ stuff.
For
like a week.
Work on your half guard.
Yeah,
work on the get ups.
Yeah,
I want you to come down to 10th Planet and learn some shit from Eddie Bravo too with your long legs.
I'd love
to learning some guard stuff. Even just learning how to hold on to guys in a way where they can't hit you and they're not going to be able to get up. Or you'll get stand ups better, which is a legit strategy in MMA. As long as they have stand ups, I don't agree with stand ups. Honestly, think they should be removed from fighting because I think that if you're going to have MMA. If you got a guy that can hold you down for 5 minutes, that's what it is. You get in 5 minutes from now, you're going to be able to get up. And every fight starts, every round starts standing. You know.
So you think that people should win fights based on not fighting?
Like, no.
By my, like, I just don't think that you should win a fight by your goal in the fight is just to nullify the fight. Like, if I can stop this fight from happening for three 5 minute rounds, then I win.
I understand what you're saying, but I think that if a guy can take you down and hold you and control you, he's kicking your ass. Even if he's not beating you up the way you would beat a guy up.
Right.
Like, if you had your druthers, you'd force guys to stand with you and you'd light them up. You have a giant advantage over 99.9% of the planet right. in MMA when it comes to kickboxing. Your ideal world is like get these guys to just stand with you. Mm-hmm. Let's just make an agreement. Fuck shooting, no takedowns, let's just throw.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a giant advantage. And so other guys would say, listen, let's make an agreement. No kickboxing. Let's just see who's the better grappler. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, get the fuck out of here. But for a guy like Ben Askren, that would be a really good agreement, right?
Right.
Because he could take down most guys he fights. Ben Askren gets a hold of guys like Douglas Lima, a fucking killer kickboxer, dangerous motherfucker. Ben Askren just ragdolls him, mm-hmm. tosses him to the ground, and can do that consistently. So for a guy like that... Why would a guy like that want to stand up? He could grab a hold of you, and you can't stop him from taking you down. If you watch like some of Askren's fights, by the time it gets to the third and fourth round, his opponents are like, "Fuck, this guy's going to take me down again, and I can't do shit." Mm-hmm. Well, that's a fight. Right. I mean, he is fighting, but he's fighting you his way. He doesn't have the kind of snap to his punches or kicks that you do. He doesn't have the kind of arsenal of attacks when it comes to striking that a guy like you does. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to holding motherfuckers down and giving them noogies, punching them in the face, and they can't do shit about it. Mm-hmm. That's his world. And I think for fighting to be realistic, you've got to have guys like that as well. Like, a lot of people didn't like Matt Brown and Johnny Hendricks, the last fight. Right. I loved it. I didn't love it because I wanted Matt Brown to lose. I loved it from a technical standpoint because you got a guy like Johnny Hendricks, who is a decorated All-American wrestler, and it just shows you. This is what happens when you fight a high-level wrestler like Hendricks that's on point. The motherfucker's going to take you down whenever he wants to, and he's going to be on top, and you're going to be eating shit sandwiches. And that's just the way it goes. And that's a real fight. If you want to fight in MMA, that's a real fight. Now, if Hendricks and Matt Brown fought in a Muay Thai fight, it'd be a completely different fight. If Hendricks couldn't shoot for the takedown whenever he was in trouble, and he got stuck, or especially, forget Muay Thai, glory rules. We can only grapple for 5 seconds, or you can only clinch for 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. Then you got a completely different fight. And then you got a fight where Matt Brown's just throwing elbows and kicks and knees and punches and just keeps coming at you. He's not afraid to throw a flying knee because he's not worried about getting taken down. Mm-hmm. He's not worried about just blasting you with leg kicks because you can't grab his legs. You can't trip him and throw him down and get on top of him. You can only kickbox with him.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that if you take the guy down and you just lay on top of him, that it's somebody's responsibility to, for the love of God and the fans, to do something and stand him up. Or like, you know, my last fight, you know, the referee's like, you guys got to improve position or I'm going to stand you up. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, stand me up, bitch.
You're going to stand you up. Like, all right. We're going to stand you up. And I'm like, are you going to fucking stand us up or not? Or, you know, he's clinching against the fence. I mean, I think I agree with you. And that's, I mean, the way I obviously have to look at it is that I have to be able to stop him from doing that. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the reality is I can't allow these guys to continuously do this because let's face it, that's what people are going to do. But I think that on the scorecards, if one guy gets dropped and then lays on top of you for 3 minutes and then, you know, who wins that round? The guy that drops the other guy clean with a punch or the one that lays on top of
you? You're talking about your specific fight.
My specific fight.
Yeah, well, if you want to judge damage.
I mean, mine's the only one that matters, Joe.
Especially that one, right?
Yeah.
If you want to judge damage, for sure you won that round. And you won that fight if you want to judge damage. But the problem is they don't just judge damage. They also judge control. He didn't do anything to you once he got you down. I mean, he stayed active, but there was no moments where, like, you were in trouble. Mm-hmm. The moment where you hit him and dropped him was the most significant moment of that fight by far, because the dude's consciousness was wobbled, his fucking legs gave out, he was on Queer Street, he was in deep shit, but he was able to clinch up with you and it was able to turn into a grappling match and survive. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it damage wise yeah, that was the closest to him losing consciousness for sure. But MMA is about a bunch of shit. It's about controlling the moments. See, I personally think that Pride had it right.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think they had the best rules. I like the yellow cards. I don't like fighters being punished financially. I don't agree with the yellow cards as far as like taking 10% of your purse. I think that's bullshit. But I do think that some stalling, like if guys are just running away and they're not doing something, you should be able to penalize them maybe a percentage of a point. Like maybe instead of a full point deduction, maybe it's a percentage of a point and all that. Because I think the scoring system, 10-point scoring system, is retarded. The only reason it exists is because it exists for boxing.
Right.
And it kind of works for boxing. It's a good system for boxing. But when you have MMA and you're dealing with takedowns, submission attempts, kicks, punches, elbows, knees, I mean, most people, if you don't know, if you've never watched Muay Thai is judged very different than MMA and very different than boxing. Like, the clinch in Muay Thai is very important. Controlling the clinch is one of the most important things. Kicks are judged very highly in Muay Thai.
I think the problem with Muay Thai in the U.S. is that it's refereed by Steve Mazzagatti and other people that do, you know, the same guys. Like, if you watch a Muay Thai fight in Thailand, the referee actually knows what's going on in the clinch. And if there's not shit going on in the clinch, they break you. But Steve Mazzagatti will let you hold on. I mean, when I fought Simon, he would, like, I was talking to Steve. And he would, like, Steve, are you going to break us? And he would just hold me against the rope for a long, long, long period of time.
Right.
And he does that consistently. So
you need, like, a Paulo Tocha guy or something like that. Like, someone who's been... Maybe not him.
No, not Paul.
You know what I'm saying?
Next topic.
He's always been nice to me. But you know what I'm saying? Like, someone who's maybe competed in Muay Thai, someone who's been around a long time, you know, someone who understands Muay Thai.
I mean, I think that goes in anything, is that the people that are judging and the people that are refereeing in any sport, you know, should know what the hell they're doing, you know? And
unquestionably.
That's important in any sport, you know? And, like, with... I might sit here and complain about my fight. I really don't care. But
who was the referee?
Beltran.
Yeah, he's good.
He's good.
Mike's good. Mike's very good.
But three judges, three different scorecards.
That's a problem. Yeah.
The one deciding scorecard, all three rounds to my opponent.
That doesn't make sense.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. That's incorrect.
What frustrates me about that situation is, like, I have to look at my record and deal with it. And I have to deal with the consequences, pay-wise, sponsor-wise, whatever, you know, if I don't do my job, regardless of anybody else. If I don't do my job, there's consequences. But in all of the athletic commissions on a regular basis, there's constantly mistakes and there's constantly people not doing their jobs correctly, and there's no consequences for them. There's never any there's never anything but the fighter that... You know, has to deal with it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Manny Pacquiao's fight with Timothy Bradley. You know, what was the consequence to that?
Well, whatever
happened.
One of the women who was a very controversial judge in that stopped judging because of that fight. And there was one other fight that she judged as well, where there was a lot of speculation about, you know, whether or not there was corruption involved or just incompetence, which is just speculation. No one knows. But she had a series of, like, really ridiculous scorecards on championship-level fights where you're like, what the fuck? Like, how is this? Like, first of all, especially in boxing. Boxing has been around for fucking hundreds of years. We're not talking about MMA where there's just really not that many people that are really good practitioners in all the various martial arts that understand all the different positions. There's, when you watch in boxing, it's pretty goddamn clear cut. There's punching, there's movement, there's defense. That's it. That's all it is.
Like this Floyd and Mayweather fight.
What did you think about that fight?
I thought it was exactly what I thought was going to happen.
Me too.
You know? I mean, and I'm not the person that hates, I mean, what drives me nuts is how many people have no clue about boxing and are all over, like, the internet now complaining and saying their side of the story. The fact is Mayweather is the best in the world at defense and not getting hit and hitting you and not getting hit. And the reason this fight was so interesting to everybody is they thought that Manny Pacquiao was going to do something different than what had happened in 48 other of Mayweather's fights. And it didn't happen, and everyone's pissed off at Mayweather about it. It's like, that's the same shit he's done his whole career. What? You should be mad at Pacquiao. But the scorecards were messed up. They mismarked the scorecards. You saw this?
No.
Yeah, they thought that Mayweather was in the blue corner or the red corner or the whatever.
What?
Yeah, they came out and there was one of those. They still gave it to Mayweather. They had the scores correctly, but it was marked red versus blue. It's on the internet.
Oh, so they marked the wrong corner, but they were still judging for Mayweather.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of fucking shitty people that are involved in every sport. You're always going to have that. There's definitely a lot of shitty boxing judges. But I just think that the having a shitty boxing judge is almost less excusable than having a shitty MMA judge, because there's so many fucking boxing fans. There's so many guys that have been doing it for so long. And if you listen to, like, Harold Letterman on HBO, I very rarely disagree with that guy. Mm-hmm. I listen to his scorecards. He makes sense. Mm-hmm. I hear what he's saying. You know, same Steve Farhood. Is that the guy's name that does it for Showtime, I think? I think that's his name.
Yeah, I think so. Sounds good.
That, the Showtime guys, same thing. I mean, they disagree on a round or two here or there, but their points are on. They know boxing. They understand what the fuck is happening.
Right.
You know, they're appreciating everything that's going down while you're watching a fight. You telling me you can't find 9, 10 of those guys that only judge championship fights? That's right. Those are the only guys ever. Right. Like, here's the list. These are the best in the world at judging boxing. When you have a boxing match, these are the only guys that should be able to judge.
Yeah, it's just. There's a reason there's three judges. It's because if one of you makes a mistake, the other two will fix it. But if have three judges have three completely different scorecards, what are we doing here?
You know what I think we should do, too, because of the fact that we have the internet today? I think there should be a panel of experts that you just have that are floating online. Like, say, like, you know, pick out a bunch of guys, like a guy from Bloody Elbow, a guy from SB Nation, a guy from Sure Dog. Have, like, a bunch of guys who are real legit fans, journalists, guys who have been doing it for a long time, and have that be, like, a fourth judge. Mm-hmm. Like, say if you're in a situation where, you know, you got a close fight, have the three people calling at ringside, and then the one group of people that agree online. Let's say maybe 80% of them agree that this guy won, you know, and that should count in the scoring system. I think having three people is not enough people. I think you should have a bunch of people to judge a fight.
And then you get to a point where it's like, okay, you could question, you're going to, what do you call it? Like, appeal the decision or mm-hmm. whatever.
Nobody ever wins those.
Nobody ever wins, but the reason they don't win is the same reason why the police never get charged with murder when they kill people. It's because they protect their own. It's like mm-hmm. the head of the athletic commission writes you a letter, says, yes, you made valid points, but we need to support our people, because they don't want to say that, you know, our guy screwed up, you know? And that's so the fighter has to eat it, you know?
That is a real issue.
And that's messed up, you know? It should be some sort of, you know, if you make a mistake, you have to pay the consequences or own up to it. But it's like when the judges or the athletic commission makes a mistake, it's the fighter that suffers from it, has to deal with the consequences. I just think it's wrong.
There was a real issue with that with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. They ousted the athletic commission chamber. The head of the athletic commission's gone.
Mm-hmm. When one of my fights, I got swept. What was questionably an illegal sweep, and I got slammed on my head, and the referee didn't see it, and let me stand up walking the wrong way, and then I got teed off on. And they called it a knockout, and I appealed to the athletic commission. I had three different videos with footage of showing that it was an illegal sweep and that the referee wasn't paying attention. It was like, no way, I'm not winning this one. And Kaiser wrote us a letter saying, you know, although you made very good points, we need to support our athletic commission. And nothing happened.
Yeah, he's the dude. Yeah. I wasn't going to bring him up by name.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a bad guy either, but Kaiser's he's a politician, yeah. You know, and that's why he got ousted.
And then my next fight, I score a knockdown and a jab in like the first round, and then the scorecards come out, and two of the judges didn't count the knockdown. They just didn't count the eight point must system.
What?
He won by one, or I lost. He won by 1 point. It was like, where's the? I forget what the score was, but there was no way he could have scored that many points if they would count the knockdown.
That was
in Nevada.
Yeah, there's a lot of shady shit going on when it comes to judging. Just the idea that what drives me crazy is the idea that someone who is not a practitioner, doesn't understand what's happening, has never really been punched in the face probably their whole life, mm-hmm. can judge a pro kickboxing bout. Like, right. That's bananas. That doesn't make any sense. Like, how'd that guy get that gig? Especially jiu-jitsu and MMA. Because if you don't understand what the fuck, like if you're, like say if a fight goes to the ground and the guy on the bottom is threatening with submissions and the referee or the judge rather doesn't score it for him because he doesn't understand how close the guy was to getting tapped.
Yeah, the guy that's on the bottom has a knee bar, but he's on mm-hmm. the bottom, or an ankle lock or whatever it is. But yeah. He's on the bottom, but he's almost got it, you know, and the guy's wincing in pain, but he's on top. But the other person, all they can see is the guy's ass from the mm-hmm. inside. They don't know. So that guy wins the round because he held you down for two rounds.
Well, we had a fight for those judges to get screens for them to get monitors to watch the fights.
I asked you about that last time. That's really important.
Yeah, we had a fight for that. That was big. Because I'll tell you, man, I don't see a lot of shit that's happening, and I'm fucking as close as anybody alive.
Right.
I'm right there. I'm touching the floor next to the cage with my hands while the fight's going on, and sometimes I can't see shit.
Well, it's 30 feet across to the other side of the cage, right?
I think the cage is too big, too.
Yeah.
We used to use a smaller one for the... For the WEC and for the Hard Rock fights. We used to do fights at the Hard Rock, and we'd be in a smaller cage. I like that one better. I think it forces guys. I mean, you can still move. It's not like you're fighting in a phone booth, but the idea that you could literally run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could sprint away from a guy in the octagon. It's so big.
Yeah.
I mean, they're greedy. What, don't they want more seats in the arena?
Yeah.
Just shrink that bitch up, put some more fucking seats.
Why do they do
that
it?
Cash?
Why
I don't
do
know.
They, you know?
I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe it looks more grand or something like that. I don't know. Really, I don't understand it. So the smaller cage is plenty big. It's still really big.
I think the Bellator cage is smaller. Like yours is 30. I think ours is 25.
Which one is that? Well, Bellator's better?
I think Bellator's better.
What do you think about this Reebok sponsorship shit that's going down? This is a big deal right now in MMA that Reebok is the official sponsor for the UFC. Fighters can't have independent sponsors when they walk into the cage now. And financially, it seems to be... a huge disaster for the fighters.
I think that I'm glad I fight for Bellator, and you can sponsor me for Bellator if you'd like.
And do you have management that they can contact sponsorship?
Michael Kogan.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
He told me to say hello to you.
Oh, tell him I said what's up. Yeah, I think it's whenever you see these guys complaining and talking about the difference in the amount of pay that they're getting, like that's not good. It's just not good.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff had to be worked out, I think should have been worked out in advance. It's great to have a big sponsor like Reebok involved, but not if the fighters have to suffer.
Yeah, I think it's just when it came out, it was, you know, I think everyone kind of saw this coming. You know, Tim Kennedy did a tweet today, and he said he was getting $2,500 or something for his, and that's the only sponsor that you're allowed to allowed to have, you know. It's
Well, Brendan Schaub said he would be getting $10,000, but every single fight that he had before this, he was getting more than, he was getting six figures is what he said. So, I mean, at least 100,000. I don't know how much six figures, you know, could mean as much as 900,000 for every fight. So six figures for every fight. And then now he's making $10,000. And that's a big hit.
Yeah, it's huge. That's huge. And it's based off the ranking, you know? So if you're Chris Weidman's going to get more money than that.
Well, even the champs get $40,000. The champs, the best guys in the world, get $40,000.
That
doesn't seem like enough to me.
No,
it just doesn't
seem right.
Look, I'm not a businessman. I'd be the shittiest businessman in the world. If I owned the UFC, the UFC would probably be filing for bankruptcy right now. I would never have gotten it to where it is. I would never done any of the smart moves that these guys have done. I'm an idiot when it comes to business. But I just don't. I don't like when I see fighters suffering financially. I don't like it at all.
It's just a really weird thing, you know. It's great for Bellator and the guys at Bellator because, you know, all of those sponsors that can no longer sponsor in the UFC got to go somewhere in June or July.
What do you think about a fighters union? I mean, I was going back and forth with John Fitch about that today, and John Fitch actually, he posted something. Let me pull it up because...
I was really surprised how what an intelligent guy John Fitch is. I saw some of the videos he posted, like
he's very smart,
of him talking politics. I was like, God, I wish I could speak that well.
Yeah, he's a very smart dude. He wrote, I posted something about MMA being illegal in New York because New York just there was an article that was posted about New York being the corruption capital of America, more corruption in New York than anywhere else. And when I posted it, John Fitch said that he said, no, the reason MMA is illegal in New York is because of Zuffa's treatment of employees, both fighters and hotel workers, which is not really true. Even if you disagree with the way UFC treats fighters or hotel workers. And when they say hotel workers, they don't mean like...
I recant my intelligent comment. I'm just
kidding. I think he's just saying that because, you know, he's upset. You know, I don't think he's... he's not happy with the way a lot of things went down. But
I think it's old school boxing politics.
It is, 100%.
It's the boxing commission in New York. They have no other athletic commission as far as kickboxing. They don't sanction kickboxing there either. They have you know, their own sanctioning body that's not a state-run thing in New York.
So, yes.
So there's no, you know, the benefit of having an athletic commission as a fighter is that you're guaranteed to get paid. You're guaranteed to have health insurance like for the fight if you get hurt or whatnot. And when it's not through the state, you know, the IKF, the what any letters you want to put together, it's you don't have that same confidence. And in New York, it's only boxing. You have the WKA when you fight in New York, and a lot of states that are too small to have the athletic commission. But it's boxing has been huge in New York for eternity, and that's what they want. You know,
it's also the culinary union. The culinary, when he was talking about hotel workers, what he's talking about is the culinary. The UFC, this is the long and short of it. The UFC is owned by Zuffa. Zuffa also owns, the people that own Zuffa also own Station Casinos. They own 20 plus casinos in Vegas, and they're non-union. The employees voted for them to be non-union. The union wants it to turn union because if it was union, they'd make somewhere around like $15 million a year just from the Station Casinos. So they've had this campaign for years to try to get the UFC to acquiesce and become union casino, Station Casino, Union Casino. So they have this smear campaign against the UFC. And so that's what he's saying. When he's saying hotel workers, that's what he means. He doesn't mean like the UFC shows up and starts beating up hotel workers.
How does he know all this stuff? That's amazing to me.
Tim Kennedy, my Twitter got hacked yesterday. he can say that without any irony whatsoever. Yeah. That's hilarious. I love Tim Kennedy. He's a bad motherfucker. But so John Fitch posted about this thing, MMAFA, Mixed Martial Arts Fighters Association. MMAFA is on Twitter. There's, a guy named Rob Macy, M-A-Y-S-E-Y. He must be in charge of it. And I don't think it's a bad idea to have some sort of an organization that looks out for fighters. And I also think that it's super important to have something like Bellator, like that is owned by Viacom, that starts to come up in the public's consciousness and become bigger and bigger and have more competition.
Yeah, I think competition is the best. You know,
the only way you get anything. A fight like Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather is you have two bad motherfuckers who are on rival promotions. They get together and Showtime and HBO both got together and said, listen, let's make some money.
Yeah.
Let's put this fucking thing together. These are the two biggest fighters in the world. You're going to make 4.5 million pay-per-view buys. I mean, that's fucking insane.
At $100.
At $100. And nothing like that exists in MMA. And if Bellator had a champion, you know, if you become champion at Bellator at 185 pounds and it builds up where you're knocking dudes dead and then, you know, whoever is in the UFC at the same time, you know, Weidman or Vitor or Jacare or whoever the fuck it is, if it builds up in the public's consciousness, like this fight has to happen, it has to take place.
UFC did with Pride years ago, right?
Yes. Well, sort of.
Sort of.
Tried to, didn't really work. I mean, they tried to make an agreement with Pride. And, you know, the UFC sent Chuck Liddell over there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Pride was supposed to send some fighters over here, but it never happened. They brought over Vanderlei. And Vanderlei and Chuck, you know, had that stare down the octagon. But it wasn't until years later when Pride was purchased by the UFC that the fighters actually came over. It was mostly some Japanese fuckery. Yeah,
I heard there's a lot of fuckery back then.
Yeah, there's a lot of slickness. Those guys are slick. I mean, not in a good way, but, you know, they made a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
You know what the whole Pride UFC thing happened? You know, do you know the story behind it? The UFC purchased Pride for $65 million. When they got it, they realized that all their contracts were invalid. They were all illegal. All they had was a library. They essentially had a library of DVDs and tapes, which... good luck making $65 million off of that. And so then they tried to sell it, you know, or tried to sue them, and that didn't really work. I mean, good luck trying to sue someone in Japan.
Right.
You know, what, you got to keep flying over to Japan every couple of weeks for court dates. And,
yeah.
And on top of that...
just to get an extension.
Yeah. While they bought Pride, they were going to keep the Pride office open and have, like, you know, they were going to start running Pride events in Japan, and they realized how hard it is to do. Like, it's not easy. It's not like you're just going to, like, you would do an event in New Mexico. You know, it's a totally different country. I mean, they have completely different laws, completely different customs. And the people that were working for them, they were all, while they had an office running, the people who were working for them started putting together Dream.
Right.
So then they put together their own MMA organization and started putting on their own fights. It's fucking chaos.
So they just had bad contracts? Or they just, the contract just was legally shit?
That's why Fedor never came to the UFC initially. The reason why Fedor wasn't a part of the Pride deal is the contracts were dog shit. There was nothing there.
And that was probably air. Fedor was probably a big reason behind buying Pride.
Oh, yeah. That. How could you not want Fedor to come over? I mean, they tried hard to get Fedor. A lot of people don't realize that how hard they tried. It was like, yeah, if UFC fucking cared about putting on the right fights, they would have had Fedor come over. They would, M1 Global, who are the people that promote Fedor, they wanted to have co-promotion rights with the UFC. But the problem is, that's not like, they don't have a, there's no promotion there. Like, it's just the management team of Fedor. Like, they wouldn't really be promoting anything. They would just be glomming on and making. So the UFC offered them a big, you know, percentage of the pay-per-view buys, a large chunk of money that you would get when Fedor fights. They wanted to be co-promotion. They wanted to be the UFC and M1 Global. Who the fuck is M1 Global? Nobody knows what that is.
Put, like, three shows on.
Yeah,
or
you're
something?
Not talking about like Showtime and HBO or like Bob Arum and and Golden Boy Productions, two established companies. You're talking about one company that fucking no one knows and one company that's the NFL of MMA. So it didn't make any sense. They offered him a fuckload of money, and then Dana always said, listen, you guys got to realize that this guy can lose, and if he loses, this ain't worth shit. Like, as soon as he loses, this is not worth anything. And then he goes to Strikeforce, and then Verdum triangles him, wraps him up, taps him out, and like, that's it. Everything just got weird. And then after that, Bigfoot beats the fuck out of him, and then after that, Henderson KOs him. That's it. There goes your big money. It all went away. And there goes the dreams, man. Mm. The fucking fights it could have been with that guy in the UFC would have been amazing. Mm. But that's how it goes. Japanese fuckery. Apparently, the way they do business is a lot of they'll say, we will get together and have a meeting, and we are interested in selling Pride. And then, you know, then they get together and everyone gets really excited and there's all this publicity and they go, oh, we changed our mind, but we have a big event next week. And then they put on this big event. Now they have all this publicity because the UFC is going to buy Pride. And then they put on this fucking gigantic show and it's very clever. They just have a different way of approaching
things. Did anybody
ever
figure out what the microphone was about? Like, why do they have the headset? Why did the referee have a headset?
So he could talk.
Made some accusations, but...
Oh, he was saying that
it was fake.
Yeah, he was just fucking with fighters.
I know, but he fucking makes some good points. Why would he have a headset?
Well, there is a problem with some of the fights in Pride that were clearly fixed.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. There can be no doubt. You watch Mark Coleman versus Takada. If you don't think that fight was fixed, you're an asshole.
Well, and the K1, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Masato and Bukau, like how they almost killed Masato trying to get the win over Bukau. Did you see
really?
That play? Oh yeah, like, Bukau killed him in three rounds,
fight.
And they give extra round.
Really?
And then he kills him in the fourth round, and then extra round, and you can see Masato like, what the fuck?
Really?
And like Bukau was just kicking the fuck out of him, and I guess Masato had to retire for like 8 months or something. Had internal bleeding. It was bad.
Whoa,
it was bad. They always
that's
Japanese
a fight I missed.
Are kind of known for trying to get the Japanese win. You know?
Yeah, there's always going to be that. There's always going to be a little bit of that, but yeah, it's fun, man. The glory early days of MMA and kickboxing. And look, when you look at that, like say, you know, they definitely did some fuckery, but they put K1 on the map and therefore kickboxing on the map on a grand scale. When you look at those K1 Grand Prix and they're in the Tokyo Dome in front of like God knows how many thousands of people. That was amazing.
That was that's where how I fell in love with kickboxing. That was my dream was always watching those World Grand Prix. And then when Glory was like, "Oh, you want to fight in a one night tournament?" Yeah, waiting my whole life for this. Yeah.
Well, I just hope that Glory, and there's a big event that's going on this Friday night. They're doing regular events on Spike. I just hope that it can achieve the same sort of level in America that the UFC has, or that Pride and K1 had in Japan. And I just think if you look at the quality of the fights that they're putting on, it's right up there. It's amazing. I think they're the best quality as far as the level of the strikers, the best quality we've ever had. Guys like you and Nicky Holskin and Mark DeBonk. There's like so many guys that are like at a super high level in Glory right now.
Yeah. It's really exciting. They're putting, the production value on their shows is really good. It's, Yeah, I just, you know, I hope people keep tuning in or start tuning in. I know their ratings have been a little questionable lately on some really big cards, and yeah, man.
They just need more push. They need to keep doing. They need to keep doing it, and eventually, I think it's going to catch on. Guys like Raymond Daniels, Joseph Valtellini. There's like, there's so many high level guys that are fighting exciting fights. They're wild, exciting fights to watch. I just can't see it not working. I just think it just has to. It just has to keep pushing. You know, that's all it is. I mean, it seems to me like the product is there. It's just a matter of letting people know about it.
Yeah.
And then this, you know, having it on Spike is good, too. Having that Friday night fight thing. Every Friday night, they have fights on Spike, whether it's a Bellator event or a boxing event or a Glory event.
Yeah.
If they can keep that up, that could be really big.
Yeah, it's huge. Those PBC boxing cards have been pretty awesome on there, too.
Yeah.
You know, production value has been really good on that. It's been, you know, they said boxing is dead, but it seems like there's a lot of buzz behind boxing right
now. How can you say it's dead when they have 4.5 million pay-per-view? I'm looking forward to Canelo Alvarez versus James Kirkland this weekend.
Yeah.
That's going to be fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But I heard Kirkland, I realized that I watched the you know, the countdown show that they were doing about it, whatever they call it, 24/7. And Kirkland didn't train with Ann Wolf for this fight.
No.
Which is like, if you ever thought like a guy definitely should be training with a woman trainer, like in any other sport,
if that ever happened,
a combat sport, you'd be like, what? But if you look at like the shit that Ann Wolf would make him do, she would get in a truck and she had a heavy bag attached to an arm on the front of the truck. And then the truck would move forward at like a certain amount of miles per hour. And he was forced to back up and punch the bag as he's backing up doing road work. Never seen anybody do that before.
Never, no.
But they showed it in the, you know, in the training montages and stuff. And I was like, that is a fucking great idea.
Yeah.
Because you have to keep up.
You got it. Yeah.
The truck's coming your way. You know, you got to back up and, you know, you can't take any breaks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for whatever how many rounds she's making him do or how many minutes she's making him do, as he's backing up, he's got to hit that fucking bag. And when he was with her, his conditioning was on point, man. I mean, she put him through hell. But some dudes don't want to go through hell. They go through hell a few times. Like BJ Penn with Marv Rinovich.
Yeah.
He went through hell a few times.
Yeah.
And then he was like, fuck this, man. Yeah. I'm not going through hell.
Yeah. I had a strength coach a couple years back that was awful. And then we stopped doing it. But I was really successful when I was with him. Fucking hell for sure, though.
That's what it is, though, right? It's like this Nick Curson guy who trained Rafael Dos Anjos. It's one of the reasons why I can't wait to talk to him. It's because when you put those guys through hell like that, the results are undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter of like, how much should that replace skill training?
Right.
You know, like here's a perfect example. Say if a guy like Rich Franklin had gone through a guy like Marinovich when he fought Anderson Silva, he still would not have been technically able to deal with Anderson's striking.
Right. Well, wasn't Rich, like, wasn't where he's training, did we talk about that? Like, he was...
Yeah, he had some pretty intense...
He was, like, one of the most intense, hardest training fighters at the time or whatever.
Yeah, he at the time, I mean, I don't know
and he was
if it stands
huge
up.
Middleweight.
I mean,
he was
big boy.
Huge.
Yeah, he definitely was.
But yeah, just didn't have... It was the clinch, didn't have the answer for the clinch. That's a technical thing. You could have trained... All day, every day, and it's not going to change. You're lacking in that area, you know?
He also didn't have the answer standing up. I mean, even outside of the clinch, you know, when you see Anderson drop his hands and chuck and jive in front of him, my Franklin throws punches and kicks at air, and Anderson's just ducking under the kicks and looking at him like, that's a terrifying place to be.
Yeah.
When you're standing there with a guy who he knows you can't hit him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see his fight, Anderson's fight with Jorge Rivera in Cage Warriors? Cage Rage, whatever the fuck it was.
No. The only one I remember was his fight with Tony Franklin when he had the back elbow in Cage Rage. That was gnarly.
Yeah. He fought Jorge Rivera, and he let Jorge Rivera punch him in the face. Over. And Jorge is like known as a knockout guy.
Yeah.
And he punches him 3-4 times clean in the face, and Anderson just staring at him, smiling. Like, literally let him tee off on his face.
I'd be so scared to do that. You know, sometimes in the gym, you can get, you know, stupid and do stuff like that. But like, what if that goes bad? What if you're hit me and, you know, highlight.
Well, highlight Anderson and Weidman. I mean, the clowning around.
Ultimately, what happened? Huh?
That was the worst ever moment in Anderson's career and the biggest example why you should never clown around in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
That was, that was one of those things that you, when it's happening, you don't believe it's happening. You're like, what? Mm-hmm. What are we seeing? Like, what? Like, you almost have to shake your head. Like, what is this? Because, like, that's like what everybody wants down. To see. What's that? Like Nick laid down? So
I'm like, what? No, motherfucker.
He laid down and put his hand on his head like he's taking a nap.
It's so funny.
Dude, I was slamming my hands against the table laughing.
Somebody just posted a clip of it the other day, and you can hear yourself laughing. You can actually see me across this. I can't tell if I'm excited or not, but I stand up and I'm screaming something.
That was a crazy fight, man.
Yeah.
It was weird being being there for that and then watching Anderson after it was over, realizing how much pressure was on him.
Yeah.
When he just laid down and started weeping.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. Like, yeah, there's Nick.
The memes about this are awesome. All the memes going everywhere.
Look at that pose. Don't stand up, homie. Oh, my God. He's so funny. He was so crazy. The GOAT and Anderson Silva. As far as, like, a dude that people love to see fight, is you don't get much better than Nick.
No.
People love that. Look at his fucking to this day, I couldn't believe he did it. And that's after talking all kinds of mad shit. That was
none of us knew that was going to happen either.
He probably didn't even know.
Yeah. He wasn't, he was real respectful talking about him, even throughout the whole camp, I'd be like, oh, you're going to fuck him up or saying anything to him. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I'm just going to survive. And I'm like, you're going to kick his fucking ass. What do you mean you're going to survive? And then, we're in the back and he's like, said something like, I might fuck with him or something. And I was like, oh, okay. We're out there like, what the fuck is all this shit? It was awesome, though. It was great. And we could see how much it was messing with Anderson right away when he started doing it. Like,
he fucks with everybody's
this is
head.
Effective. Yeah, this is really effective.
But Nick fucks with everybody's head. He fucked with Robbie Lawler's head. You could really see it in that Robbie Lawler fight. Like, Robbie Lawler was used to just going berserk on guys. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Nick was like, what, bitch? Yeah. What, bitch? What's up, bitch? Yeah. What's up, bitch? Like, standing in front of his fame.
You could see Robbie. Yeah, it was affecting him for sure.
When Nick got into the cage, I'll never forget that fight, because he got in the cage and he looked over at Robbie. He starts going, Stockton, motherfucker! Stockton, motherfucker! And Robbie was like, looking around like, what's happening here?
Where's Stockton?
Where's this going to lead? Like, this is bizarre. Like, it's just a totally different thing.
What if Robbie would have been like, Des Moines,
Iowa, bitch. Yeah, it was a very rare moment in time. This is a big card coming up this weekend, right? The Glory card?
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Who's on this? I got it here, clued up here.
It's Simon and Artem for the belt.
And if you don't have Spike, you can watch it online. If you go to gloryworldseries.com, you could stream it for only $10. And Artem Levin and Simon Marcus. Artem Levin, one of the best kickboxers on earth, for sure. So is Marcus. Simon Marcus, one of the best on earth, too. And they're going to fight.
Yeah, they have two really interesting styles, having fought both of them. Artem is very much like a Floyd Mayweather, kind of very elusive. He'll score his points and then hold and kind of eats up the clock really well. And then Simon is one of those just like bull forward, constantly coming forward, constantly trying to... having fought both of them, Simon, when you're standing across the ring from Simon, you see somebody that you have to knock out. Like, he's going to keep coming at me no matter what. There's no weakness in his mindset. He's going to keep coming until I knock him out. With Artem, it's like supreme confidence. It's like a really, it's very interesting standing across from both of those guys.
And both guys have had a long career. I mean, you look at the records there. 54-1 for Levin, 42-2-1 for Marcus. And Simon Marcus, up until your fight, was undefeated. Mm-hmm. You knocked him out, and then he lost in China again after that as well, right?
By knockout in China. I think that was one of those things like we were talking about before where he didn't take the time off after I knocked him out. I mean, that was a bad knockout. You face plant, you're out for a long period of time, And then he got rocked again in China right after that.
Who fought him in China?
I don't know the guy's name. And he wasn't even a big name. It was a Chinese guy. The Chinese guy fought him in China.
Crazy.
Go figure.
What are the odds? It's like a Russian guy fighting you in Russia.
Yeah. But, and then he came back and won the contender tournament against Jason Wilnes and Wayne Barrett.
Now, Raymond Daniels is fighting on the card, too. He's an L.A. guy. Do you train with him at all?
I did that World Combat League like 6 years ago. We were on the same team. I met him and got to know him a little bit then. We haven't trained together.
That was a Chuck Norris thing?
Yeah.
Now, the Chuck Norris thing took place in like a bowl, right?
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
I hated it.
It
was terrible. I thought it was really set up specifically for point karate guys to do well. It was just like everything against like the kickboxer. Like
really?
We're wearing those pants, right? But underneath the pants, we have like the sport combat, super thick shin pads underneath the pants.
Oh, really?
So like, you know, your leg kick is, and it's a one round. It's 3 minutes, and then you have, you know, 30 minutes or whatever till you come back out and you fight your second round or whatever. So it's really hard to be effective with round kicks in general with a shin pad on. It's only one round, you know?
The shin pad is a weird thing, but it's not weird when you think about the fact that the guys wear gloves and that you also, like, I always wonder, especially in MMA, like, why do they have gloves on? Like, if you really, we've been talking about this a lot lately, that if you wanted to lessen the effectiveness of like punching techniques, one of the best ways is just remove the gloves.
Right.
Like if you remove the gloves, you make guys fight barehanded, you get to see what's really effective and not effective when it comes to striking.
Yeah.
You well, still can kick guys in the head. You still can knee guys in the head.
You can only kick them in the head with the shin pad on. Like imagine if you...
You mean in punch, the in world
with
combat.
That world combat. Yeah. Like, imagine punching somebody in the leg with a glove on.
Yeah.
It like takes away all of the effectiveness to it. It's different when you're hitting somebody in the chin, you know, but you'd have to hit somebody really fucking hard with a punch to the leg to hurt them, which is essentially what that shin pad would be doing for it. I hated the rules. I hated that circle. It threw me off big time, being in a circle with no ropes. And then you get into an exchange and you step back and you would be on this slant, you know?
Yeah. Why does everybody have to wear those pants?
It was something about the sponsors that, you know, I got in a lot of trouble because I had like sponsors like handed a tattooed on my back because they wouldn't let us put anything on the pants. And after the first fight, the director or whatever comes in the back and he's screaming and yelling, Chuck Norris is really mad at you. And I'm like, oh, Chuck Norris is mad at me.
Is he mad?
Like really pissed off that I was, you know, taking advantage or something. I don't know.
Did they not state it in the rules?
I think it was in the rules.
That you couldn't do it? Or
they said you couldn't have anything on. You couldn't alter the uniform. You couldn't put patches or anything on the uniform. And I'm like, well, hand a tattoo on my back. It's like permanent marker. The guy's like dumping water on me in the back and like scrubbing it. It wasn't even like he was trying to get it off. He was just trying to screw it up so my sponsor would be, you know.
Did it work?
No, I got paid. I don't know.
Did it mess it up at all, though? I mean, henna tattoos.
Oh, yeah. It messed it up. Because it was like, you got like henna. I think we went to like Venice Beach to get it done, like before I left. And then like I'm in the hotel room and it's all like smeared and bad. And I'm like, hey, can you cover this? Like the other guy on the team with a Sharpie. Yeah.
Well, Sharpie might be even better than henna, right?
Yeah.
But things like that might last even longer.
Yeah. So they're scrubbing it and it was whatever.
That was an issue with the UFC once with Rico Rodriguez. He had some
Golden Palace.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That was back when they had online gambling was like really popular. Didn't Bernard Hopkins do that once too? I feel like guys were doing that in boxing fights.
Happened a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, but they stopped. Somehow or another, they put a stop to it.
Mm-hmm. I don't why though.
Why I don't know. I mean
the UFC, you're gonna ruin the man or something.
It kind of does fuck with what you're looking at. I mean, it doesn't matter to me if a guy has sponsors all over his shorts. But if he's got like a big sponsor tattooed on his back, it just seems like...
Seems kind of cheesy.
Yeah. You know,
like low...
Low rent.
Low rent, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to cut into a guy's ability to make money, but that does seem a little low rent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, goldenpalace.com. Back in the day. He's a fucking freak, huh? 49 years old, still fighting at a world-class level.
The alien.
Fights against Kovalev, who's a murderous puncher.
Yeah.
Russians are a different kind of white people, huh?
Yeah.
They really are.
How about this Golovkin guy?
He's a motherfucker,
dude. Oh, my God. I love that dude.
I love him.
Yeah. And he'll knock you out with shots that it doesn't mean... Vinny and I were talking to him about him the other day. Like, it doesn't look like he's trying to hit you hard, but like when he throws it all natural and loose, it's like he knows it's going to knock you out. He's knocking people out with like body shots that don't look hard, look like they miss, and people are dropping. Awesome.
Yeah, his left hook to the body is fucking devastating. One of the best in the business at it.
I forget who he fought, but he threw a right hand and it looked like it slid off. Didn't even look like it was like penetration at all. And the guy's done. Knockout. I think it was two fights ago he hit the guy with it.
Yeah, he's a motherfucker, dude.
Amazing.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's really awesome. I love the fact that there's so many guys like that now. Like him, Kovalev, Provodnikov.
Yeah, Provodnikov. I love watching that guy
fight. Savage Russians,
man. I love watching
that
guy fight.
Oh, that fight that he had with Lucas Matisse? Jesus Christ, that was crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see the urine sample after the fight?
No.
Dude, pull that up because you got to see this. He posted an Instagram photo of his urine sample, and it looks like he poured Coca-Cola into the cup. Like, he was pissing just so dark from blood and, you know, internal bleeding. And, you know, a lot of, apparently not just internal bleeding, but when you have an unbelievably grueling physical event, like ultra marathons, like look at it up there. That's his piss, bro.
What? No.
Yes. No. Yes. But pull up the actual Instagram so you could see it and we could read it. Yeah, that's his urine sample, man. That is his urine sample. That's the urine sample that he... gave the athletic commission the post-doping, post-fight.
Because I've pissed blood before, but it was nothing that dark like that. It was like fucking orange. Red.
Well, I have a friend who did an ultramarathon, my friend Cameron Haynes.
Uh-huh.
And he said the same thing, that when you do an ultramarathon, when you pee, it looks like Coca-Cola.
Really?
Yeah. It's like your kidneys are failing.
Yeah.
You know?
Fuck.
Yeah, fuck. Here it is. Sorry to all my friends. I lost tonight, and I felt I could have won this fight. I almost had him, but the fight happened the way it happened. And here it is. He's saying, one more fight in my career. When I did my doping test, I had black urine. That one, the first one was against Tim Bradley. Black urine. Black urine. Fuck, dude. I think it's an endurance thing, too. It's just a kidney failure thing. Because the guys who have
fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that's real.
Yeah, it's totally real. Those guys who have rhabdomyolysis from CrossFit and shit like that, it's one of the signs of it. You get black urine. But ultramarathoners, they all talk about it, black urine.
What's the difference in an ultramarathon and a regular marathon?
100 miles in a day, 24 hours. It's a 24-hour race. You run 100 miles. And you're just broken when it's over.
I mean, why? Why do they do that?
Prove they can do it.
Yeah.
My friend Cameron, who does it, is a fucking savage. He's just a psychopath.
Is he like a really skinny guy?
He's 170 pounds, pretty yoked, actually.
Really?
Yeah. He's a bow hunter. He's a professional bow hunter. And he started getting into endurance training because bow hunting, you would think, is not a physical event. But what the physical event is getting to the animals the mountains, yeah, and packing out all the meat. So, like, you're going, like, I had this guy, Remy Warren, on the podcast recently, and he was talking about how they had to pack out this, was it a moose or an elk they shot? Moose or an elk, one of those. Big fucking animal, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's packing out 100 plus pounds at a time, walking several miles back with 100 plus pounds at elevation, going up mountains, down mountains, and then going back. So, he, over the course of, you know, X amount of days when they packed all the meat out, it took them, it was 30 miles of walking with 100 pounds on your back up mountains.
Wow.
And he's like, after it was over, he goes like, I was just done.
Yeah.
He goes, I got sick. That. I was exhausted. My body was just broken. That's what you don't think about. And these guys that do it, like Cameron, every year goes elk hunting in the mountains, shoots a big elk every year, has to carry it out. And so he does all these crazy workouts. And one of them he does, he takes one of these, like a meat backpack, they call it a Tenzing backpack. Mm-hmm. And he puts 135 pound rock in the backpack and he'll fucking hike up hills with this fucking rock on his back. Miles and miles.
Man, I didn't realize how spoiled we used to just go to my buddy's uncle's property, and then we hike a little bit, and then we'd shoot the thing and drag it to where he could get to it and call him, and he'd bring a fucking four-wheeler and drag the shit out and we'd hang it in the barn. Yeah, that's
the easy way.
Yeah, and it spoiled.
Well, that's the way most people do it. Tree stands.
Yeah,
you know. But when you go for elk in the mountains, the big elk, oftentimes they're hard to get to. They're smart. They're not going to hang around near your house. Mm-hmm. They're going to go up in the mountains and they're trying to get some elk pussy, and you gotta sneak up to them, and then you gotta call them in, and then once you shoot them, then you gotta cut them up and drag them out of there.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, so that's why he does ultra marathons. He sort of got into running and fitness because of that, and then escalated.
I just asked if he was skinny, because usually those marathoners are like super
You know, the, all the triathlete guys I know that are real
pull up, pull up his Instagram because he's got a bunch of pictures of him. Sexy bitch. He likes to show his muscles.
Yeah.
He's all these. He's just, he's an animal. 47 years old, works full-time job, trains every day, every fucking day, runs every morning, lifts every night. He's a fucking animal. That's him.
I would never say, think that was even a marathon guy, let alone an ultra marathon.
He just ran the Boston Marathon under 3 hours. He did two hours and 50 minutes. But yeah, he's an animal.
Huh.
Just killing shit, eating wild meat. That's a big part of it, too.
Yeah.
It's like... like, if you see, like, pull up a little bit from up there, above there. Yeah, that's him in the marathon. But there's a picture of his legs. You go, keep scrolling up, 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 not down, up.
I went back up.
Okay, go down a little. There's a, that right there. Like, you see, like, the fucking veins this dude's got in his legs. He's using some sort of massaging tool. But that's him. He's just a driven dude, man.
I would have never thought that was a marathon guy.
I know. Well, you'd be amazed at the kind of fitness that you need to have just to hike 8 hours a day in the mountains.
That sounds... we're talking about a lot of stuff that just gets really depressing.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work out there. There's a lot of things that people would like to do, but it's just too much work.
Yeah. And
I'd probably say that what you do for a living is at the very top of that list.
Yeah.
And you're looking at this guy carrying, you know, carrying elk steaks and running up hills. You're like, fuck that.
Yeah, terrible.
Meanwhile, he'll be looking at you fighting three times in a night going, fuck that.
Yeah.
No, fuck that. Yeah, everybody wants to eat, but few are willing to hunt. That's what, yeah, look at that. He's got a pack full with meat and giant ass fucking antlers carrying that bitch out there.
I used to hunt all the time when I was growing up in Ohio.
Yeah?
Deer hunting all the time. It's been a long time.
Best meat for you, man. No better meat in the world than wild game.
I was broke. My brother and I were living in this, living together, and we were, you know, every dollar was spent on, like, cigarettes and beer. you know, like 17, 18, 19, I think. And I guess I was younger than that, 17, 18. And we would go hunting every year, and there'd be like three or four of us, and we'd all get a deer, and we would chop up like every little piece. And I remember having like deer kebabs like for a whole year. We were living off the deer that was in the fridge. It was good times.
It's great for you, though, man. Mm-hmm. So good for you. Do you ever get a hold of some now while you're training? I'll get you some moose. I got some moose for you.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
Moose is tough. It's tougher than deer.
Yeah, I see your posts. You're quite the chef on the with that.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's fun. Like last night, man, I was coming home last night from the Comedy Store. I was driving home. It was like 12:30. I was kind of tired. I'm like, oh, I could just fucking slip right into In-N-Out right now. And nope. I said, just go home. Because I knew I had some defrosted moose in the refrigerator. So I went home, cooked some moose steaks and some kale.
Fuck In-N-Out. Look at that.
Oh, so good, no dude. That stuff gives you energy, too. When I eat that, there's something about moose. I think something about those big, athletic, very lean animals. I feel energized when I eat the meat. That doesn't seem to make sense.
Could see that.
I don't know if they really have an accurate account of all of the properties of various different kinds of meat. You know, I would like to see, like, if there's a way to do some sort of double-blind, placebo-controlled effect test on the difference between eating elk versus chicken, or the difference between eating, you know, alligator versus beef. I really would like to know. I wonder what the fuck is happening, because I try to look at it really objectively. Like, I try not to, like, maybe this is a placebo effect. Maybe I'm fucking with myself. I don't think it is, though. When I eat moose, like more than any other animal I've ever eaten, there's something about when I eat it, I feel like, I just feel like fucking charged up, man. I don't know what it is. I've heard of I have a buddy of mine who was lifting. He's a big fitness fanatic too, and his wife shot an elk, and he was eating nothing but elk for months. He's like, dude, I'm making all these fucking gains, and I gotta think it's connected to this elk.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I've nothing but elk. You know, he doesn't have a lot of money. He's like, we've been eating nothing but elk for like the past 2 months. And he goes, and I've gained like 5 pounds of muscle.
I mean, maybe there's something to that horse beef thing that Overeem was talking about.
Maybe.
I mean, obviously he's on whatever, but like the fucking horse beef thing. Maybe it is.
Well, a horse is kind of the same thing. You're talking about a super lean animal,
super athletic.
Yeah. I mean, an animal that jumps over trees with you on its back. You know? That's a motherfucker. You ever had horse?
No.
There's a place called Joe Beef in Montreal. If you've never been to Montreal, if you ever go up there to train at TriStar or something like that, the best fucking restaurant on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Montreal. I took my pal Tony Hinchcliffe there last week, and that guy serves horse all the time, and I've had it there twice.
It's good?
Really? Yeah, it's real good. It's weird.
Is that gamey or no?
No, no, not at all. It's weird that you're eating a horse, but I mean, is it? I mean, it's weird to eat a pig, you know, go watch Babe. And then have some bacon.
Well, that and pigs like waller in shit. Like they live in like 3 feet of shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
eat, sleep and shit. So that's pretty
that's not good.
Gross. That's right? Gross. It's nasty.
You ever a wild pig?
No.
Looks different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's dark. It's weird. Like the flesh is dark. I cooked a wild ham the other day. See if it's on my Instagram. I pulled up. Yeah, it's on my Instagram. There's a wild ham from about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But it's kind of like
it's different than like boars, or it's the same.
Well, boar is just male, you know. Like if you shoot a male bear is also called a boar, and a sow pig and a sow bear, they're called the female's called a sow. So when you get wild boar in a restaurant, they're kind of bullshitting you. It's not really wild. It might be wild sow. It's wild pig is what they should say.
Right.
But it sounds cool to say we're going wild boar hunting.
Yeah,
you're going wild pig hunting.
I thought that. But do all pigs have, like, the fucking...
Yeah, there it is. See, that's what it looks like. See up there? That's what... That's a wild pig. That's a female. There's a female that I shot at this place called the Tejon Ranch. It's about an hour and a half north of here. Hmm. It's fucking delicious, dude. Yeah. It's so good. And there's very little fat on it compared to domestic pig. Much, much less fat.
You got, like, a giant freezer home just full of shit.
Two of them.
Shot, yeah.
Two huge freezers, awesome. Big commercial freezers. Yeah, well, I kind of decided, like, when I started getting into hunting, the first time I went hunting, I was like, I'm either going to become a vegetarian or I'm going to become a hunter. Like, let's see, like, how I feel, like, after I shoot this animal.
Oh, after you shoot it?
Yeah, I might feel like an asshole. Maybe I'll just stick to only fish. Never really felt bad about fish. They didn't even take care of their babies. They shit them out and run away.
Right.
You know, they drop fuck the
fish.
Eggs.
Fuck fish.
The male comes off, jizzes on the eggs, and then they bolt. It's like the idea of mammals, like mammals are the issue.
Yeah.
So I decided once I did it, like I'm going to try to eat exclusively in my house only wild game. I don't really totally do that because occasionally I'll go buy some bison or something like that from Whole Foods. But almost exclusively in my house, I'm eating wild game. Hmm. Like tonight, I'm having moose stew. It's cooking right now. It's on the slow cooker. I left the house this morning. It was on, and it'll cook for like 6 hours.
Have you always been like into cooking, or is it just something you started when you got into hunting?
No, I've always been into cooking some things. Like I'm really good at making steak.
Yeah.
I'm a really good steak cooker, and I cook pasta, and I cook vegetables, like real simple stuff. Mm. You know, I'm not making like quiches or anything elaborate, souffles or anything that requires like a deep cooking knowledge. My skills are limited, but I know how to do what I know how to do, you know?
You could throw some steak on the barbecue.
I'll cook
the fuck out of the
barbecue.
Steak.
The fuck out of some steak. That's, I know what I'm doing.
That's about the extent of, you know.
These foods contain the best natural sources of creatine, venison, wild game. Huh. Wow. Experts agree the best animal source of creatine is wild game. Wow. So there you go. My question's answered.
There you go.
Venison, elk, bison, and buffalo. What about moose, bitch? Moose is the same as...
It's got to be on there.
It's 100% on there.
Yeah.
It's probably just harder to get because there's no commercially available moose. You can get commercially available venison, elk, buffalo, and bison, which, by the way, are the same animal. I don't know why it's redundant. Game meat, unless it's a different type of buffalo, like there's water buffalo. But when you talk about the American buffalo, you're talking about a bison. Next best source is free-range meats, which includes turkey breast, chicken breast. I just shot a turkey. Shot a turkey a couple weeks ago. Yeah. That's interesting. That tastes different.
You shot in the body, or shot in the head?
Shot in the head.
Yeah, you're supposed to shoot the head, right?
Yeah, if you shoot it in the body, you're destroyed.
Stick it out.
Yeah, you're spitting out
buckshot.
Pellets. Yeah. Yeah, it's a dirty trick, man. You put out a rubber turkey. You put out a rubber female.
Yeah.
Start making noises.
Oh,
boy, would I like some cock. And then they come over looking to give some cock, and boom.
Blow his fucking head off.
Yeah, they don't die easy.
You should feel bad about that one. I mean, that's... No.
Birds.
No?
Birds can suck my dick.
Birds and fish.
Yeah. Birds, they at least they lay their eggs and then sit on them. So like they're like one step above.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, I have chickens that I don't want to kill. You know, they're like pets. But if shit goes down, the power goes down, I'll kill them before I kill my dog. That's for fuck sure.
Yeah, right.
Those chickens are getting it. But they're kind of, they're pets, you know. My daughters will pick them up and hold on to them. And
right.
They're cute, you know. And they're,
are they
you know,
nice?
Yeah, they're friendly.
Yeah.
We've had them since they were babies. I mean, we hatched them. I mean, not hatched them, but we got the hatchlings like days after they're born. The way it works is they actually send them through the mail, which is kind of fucked up. They do it through the U.S. Post Office. And
the egg.
No, the chicks. When the chicks are born, they pack them in special boxes and they send them. The boxes have like air holes in them and they send them one day air and it gets to you, you know, express mail, whatever it is, UPS Express, whatever the fuck they call it. It gets there and, you know, they give you an alert like, hey, it's going to be coming within one day. And then, you know, these animals haven't had any food at all for 24 hours when you get them. And you get them, and you give them some food, and they're little these little tiny things, man. You have to incubate them. We put them in this large box with a heat lamp above it, so they're in this like little chicken container box, and you know you feed them, and it's really kind of intense. Huh. Yeah.
What else you got? You got a monkey or anything?
No, no monkeys. No? I have an indoor courtyard in my house, and while I was on Fear Factor, when I was losing my fucking mind, while I was in full-blown losing my mind, I was actually thinking about putting a roof over the indoor courtyard, putting thick glass walls all around it, and putting like crocodile monitors in there, and like feeding them rabbits, like having my own Jurassic Park, like having like a little opening. Throw a rabbit through there and watch the crocodile monitors attack it and devour it. I'm like, come on, that would be the dopest shit ever. But the problem is, those motherfuckers, if they get really big, you can't really stop them. Like, if they want to attack you, they'll get like 7, 8, 9 feet long.
Yeah.
And also, their shit is toxic. Like, their shit is just disgusting. So I was like, who's going to clean their shit? I'm going to have some dude come over the house and clean their shit and like...
Get eaten by the fucking alligator?
No, it was a crocodile monitor. Have you ever seen one of those?
No, it's a monitor.
Check it out.
I thought you were talking about a crocodile.
No, it's a giant lizard. A really freaky looking giant predatory lizard.
I have seen
this. This is a crocodile monitor. Pull one up, Jamie. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the shit, I would have been like, oh, you fucked up, Joe. You should have got one.
I know. Well, I came real close, dude. Yeah. I was talking to contractors and everything. See, like, look at that one of the rat in his mouth down there. Right there, Jamie.
Yeah. See, I always thought it'd be fun to have, like, a piranha tank.
I had that.
Throw a fuck, yeah?
I had a giant piranha tank.
People over and throw steak in there and watch it go nuts?
No, the steak's not the move. The move is goldfish. You get to watch the attack. I used to go to the supermarket or the pet store every week, and I would get a large bag of goldfish. Because I had, I want to say I had 30 piranha, allegedly, because they're illegal. Allegedly. This is a made-up story. I'm just telling you. I'm making it up.
This is for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, this is for entertainment purposes only. And I also had a skeleton, a human skeleton in there that I purchased online. From like a medical supply thing, like you could buy a human skeleton, which I thought was fucked up.
That's fucked.
It's so fucked up.
That should be illegal.
It totally should be illegal. I had it.
You
had it should be illegal.
A fucking dead body in your piranha tank.
So the bottom of the piranha tank was these skeletons, like a skull and shin bone and some other bones, and people would come over and they would look at it and then they would look closer and they'd be like, "Is that a fucking real skeleton?" I'm like, yeah, it's real scary. Did you kill somebody and throw it in the tank?
Like, Joe's house is like the equivalent of like Willy Wonka chocolate factory.
For children. Okay,
I'm definitely coming over next week. For sure.
Male children. Now that I have daughters and everything, it's all feminized. They've ruined my whole existence. But not really. But I mean, my male sanctuary has now been feminized in an extreme way. I mean, I had pit bulls and fucking piranhas. I was looking to have a reptile sanctuary. But the piranhas were fun. But you know what's more fun than the piranhas? Turtles. Turtles are motherfuckers. They're way more vicious than piranhas. And you look at them, they're like, they look kind of cute and everything like that. When turtles are hungry and you feed them goldfish, I would feed the goldfish to turtles as well. Mm-hmm. They're way more entertaining.
Really?
They're way more entertaining than piranhas. They're fucking vicious bastards, man. And they would grab them with their paws. They use their little fins. They'd grab them with their fins. Hey, look at that turtle. What is he eating? Jesus Christ.
Like a tomato or something.
Yeah. You want to see, though, that's not a turtle, though. That's a tortoise, I believe. See if there's a video of turtles eating goldfish. And what was crazy is, like, well, these are actually turtles eating goldfish. They're actually legal. You know, or piranhas, since I didn't have them, because they would be illegal. Piranhas are illegal.
There was a video of, like, this lady in Thailand. I think it was Thailand. And she was, like, fishing for piranhas. She had, like, fucking some sort of gizzard or some kind of meat or whatever, and she would dangle it in the water, and the water would start going all crazy, and then she would pull it out, and there'd be all these piranhas hanging onto the meat.
Yeah, look at them. Look at this turtle. They're swimming around, and they would swim, and they would just plow into the pile of goldfish and snack on them. And when they get a hold of them, they use their little fucking hands, too. They'd grab with their little hands. I hope this guy gets one so we could see it. But they fucking mangles them. Look at them.
Oh, my kids are getting turtles.
Oh, dude, they're fun to watch, man. But you got to be careful if your kids do get turtles, because they develop all sorts of funky diseases from their shitty water. You got to clean the fuck out of the tank with those cunts. Because look at these. They're tearing them apart, man. They're mangling these goldfish. It's fun to watch because you realize, like, these things are dinosaurs, man.
Yeah.
They haven't changed for 100 million plus years. So look at that. Dead goldfish just fucking snacking on them. Come here, bitch.
That's awesome. And how often does this happen? You know, snakes, it's like
you feed them every couple days.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Awesome.
You feed them every couple days. But the thing is, you got to be real careful with touching the water and then, like, touching your face or eating something. Like, you can get diseases. Like, my wife made me get rid of them when she got pregnant.
Right.
Because having babies and being around that stuff, like, you can definitely get sick. That water gets real dirty. They're dirty animals. Mm. They shit it and they fucking it gets funky quick because they're pretty big. You know, you're dealing with something that's several inches long, just shitting in this tank. And
I've always wanted a monkey. You know, and then my girl's like, you have two kids, and I'm like, ah.
My grandmother had a monkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
What was that movie with Clint Eastwood where he had the fucking...
Every Which Way But Loose.
Yeah, had that
orangutan.
Frank or whatever is his name.
Like, Clyde.
Clyde.
Right turn, Clyde.
Yeah.
And Clyde would punch people out the window.
Yeah. I want a Clyde. Big idiot. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, until it
gets pissed and rips your fucking arm off and beats you to death with it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, all that good stuff. Look at it.
And I heard they, like, throw their shit. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, you just got to be nice to them. I'm sure if you're nice to them.
Right.
But you have to be around them all the time. It's like having a baby that never stops being a baby.
See, somebody was telling me that they had, I mean, it wasn't that kind, I forget what it was called, but it was like, it was like a little outbreak monkey, whatever that's called. And she was telling me that her dad had bought one off of some people that was like, it was already full grown and loved the dad, but it hated, like, the females get really possessive over the males.
Yeah.
And, it hated her, and you know, sometimes she'd be cool or whatever, but, like, sometimes she would, like, attack her and scream and fucking, like, scratch and shit.
Oh my god!
That movie kind of ruined it for me. Outbreak. That's not the one I want. I want that one. I want Clyde. I want the nice guy.
Well, chimps. I thought chimps would be cool to have until that lady in Connecticut.
Right.
Her friend came over and ate her friend's face.
Ripped a fucking door off the car.
Yeah, that's like the same thing. It's like it was jealous that this woman was going to be spending time with his girlfriend, who was the wife. The owner, rather, that was in his mind. It was his girlfriend,
right?
Because he used to hang out with her. The lady would give the chimp wine. She'd give him Xanax. She gave him Xanax. Crazy bitch.
Yeah.
Type of crazy bitch that's gonna have a chimp and have him walk around with diapers on is the same type of crazy bitch that's gonna give a chimp Xanax.
Yeah.
The chimp is wearing diapers. Did you know that? By the way, huge chimp, 200 pounds. Imagine a chimp as big as you, dude, but only 5 feet tall. Just fucking,
it's crazy.
Is yoked and just there's a video.
Dude,
of
can rip a fuck like they can rip your arm off.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
rip your arm off and beat you with it.
This table, this solid oak table, smash this fucking thing to pieces if it wanted to. The amount of strength that they have. Look at that. What the fucking fuck? That's like Vanderlei Silva when he was fighting in Pride,
totally.
When he fought in the heavyweight Grand Prix.
Totally.
It's totally. You know what that is? That's Husamar Pajares after he did a cycle.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. But like 50 times stronger. The physical strength that those fucking things have is off the charts. Like you can't even, we can't even imagine. We don't even know what the fuck that is.
I still want one. I love like gorillas. I love gorillas. I don't know.
Well, that was my other thought. I have this area of my yard that's a 1 acre blocked off area.
That fucker right there. Yeah.
Look at that gorilla. Jesus fucking Christ. He's yoked.
Awesome. Or this guy. Who's this
Look
guy
at there? That. That's not real. Right that's a fake gorilla. Jesus Christ. The fucking. Imagine that murderous motherfucker trying to bite your dick off. The physical strength that those things have, too. It's not like a man who's built like that. Did you see the one with the... Look at the fucking arms on that thing. Christ. Awesome. You see the one... look at the sack on him, too. Holy shit. Did you know that ball size is directly determined by the amount of promiscuous females around you?
Really?
Really, yeah. When you see an animal with giant balls, that means he's around hoes. You can't trust these hoes. You gotta have as much sperm development as possible.
Have you seen that video of that fucking guy from like Ethiopia or somewhere has like 100-pound testicles?
Yeah, there's like a bunch of dudes like that. There's a guy in America like that for a while. Do you see the in that picture? There's a hairless bear.
I mean, they're bad enough. You got to carry them around with you all the time anyway. But 100 pounds?
I don't usually bother me. It doesn't bother me like my regular size balls.
No,
I don't feel the weight. Mm. But maybe you got bigger balls than you do.
It's well, like, it's what like you luggage. Do for a living. You can never put it down. You just got to fucking... Maybe I'm surrounded by hoes.
Can't trust these hoes.
Can't trust these hoes.
Like, pull up the picture of that hairless bear. What the fuck is that, man?
It's funny. Somebody posted this today. It was 15 of the scariest bald animals or some shit like that.
Yeah, that's...
how weird animals look when they don't have hair.
That's a sun bear. I don't know what those things look like with hair. It's not a, a black bear. Well, look at that one up there. The one not the far right, but the one next to it. Keep going. Yeah, right there. Like, look at that fucking thing. Jesus Christ. That's a black bear.
That's a bear?
Yeah, because that's in Orlando. So that's a bear with mange. Creepy fucking animals, man. Jesus Christ. Yeah. How weird. Nature's weird as fuck, man. If bears didn't... What is that? Is that a baboon? Oh, my God. That's a hairless baboon. Oh, Christ. What a monster.
They can't have is a hyena. Have you seen those fucking things? And like the Africans have them like on giant leashes like they're fucking toys or pets.
They put muzzles on them and
those
shit.
Those are gnarly.
Big chains on their necks. Hairless hyena, is that real? Well, that's what they say a chupacabra is. You know, the chupacabra, like they're always like saying, oh, we found a chupacabra, it's a real animal. What a chupacabra is a coyote that has mange. Hmm. Look at that fucking monster. Look at that thing. Jesus Christ, those are scary.
Yeah.
Those
and
things
they
have some of the
huge. There's a picture somewhere like this African dude walking one and it's like enormous.
Go back to that picture, the mouth open, Jamie.
It's like an enormous pit bull.
Look at that fucking face.
Yeah.
Oh, just designed to bite through bone. That's what that mouth is for.
Well, and that fucking baboon right there too.
Oh, yeah, they're creepy as fuck, too. They kill each other left and right, too. Baboons, they kill baboon babies. They kill everything. Yeah, hyenas are the only matriarchal mammal society that we know of where the females are actually larger than the males.
Really?
Yeah, keep the males from eating the babies.
Huh.
They also have a fake dick. They have a faux penis. The female hyena has a faux penis, and she'll get on top of the male and fuck him in the ass with her fake dick.
Shut the fuck up.
I wish I was lying.
You're not making this up?
I wish I was lying. Pull up the video of female hyena.
This has got to be seen.
Female hyena faux penis.
Fuck two girls, one cup. Let's see the hyena get raped.
Nature's rough as fuck, man.
Ugh.
There's a lot of infanticide in the animal kingdom. Where
I think that's the way the world should be. I think society fucks it all up.
You think that's the way it should be, though, for real?
Well, however nature wanted it. I mean, maybe they...
This is... No, not hyenas doing it. You're going to see actual sex.
I want to see the female fake penis raping the male.
Did you Google fake female faux penis?
I can't believe this is real.
Yeah, no, it's real, man. Google images instead of... See if there's... This is this artificial penis that comes out. It's a she penis. It's an artificial penis that comes out, and the female, which is larger than the male, look, above
that
you
can see
it. How is it
artificial? It's an actual penis. It just doesn't work.
Artificial. I mean, well, it's not really a dick. It's just a hunk of meat. That's it right there. That's a male. Oh, that's a female right there.
But like, they still squat when they pee out of like mm-hmm. their vagina.
Yeah, yeah. They don't pee out of it. They just fuck you with it. Yeah. Well, they don't. You know.
I can't believe that's what.
Yeah.
I'm flabbergasted.
It says that they give birth out of it.
No.
60% of the cubs the first time mothers die of suffocation inside the pseudopenis.
Hmm.
That doesn't make sense.
Maybe they go down the wrong hole. Hmm. I wonder. I don't know. Fuck hyenas, though. Fuck that world. That whole world is horrible.
I don't want a hyena anymore.
Nah, you don't want a hyena. This is, they're just so, like, it's like people who say they want bears. Like, bear, you know, almost all bears are cannibals. Like, almost all of them. Like, especially males. Male bear, one of the reasons why they hunt males, like mature boars, is to make the population healthy. It seems counterintuitive, but male bears will eat way more cubs than any hunter's ever going to kill. Like, male bears, when they come out of hibernation, especially in the spring, one of the first things they do is go look for cubs to eat. And this is something that biologists
like
are just...
Easy prey.
Easy prey, and they don't know if they're doing it... They just guess why they're doing it. They don't know if they're doing it just for food, or if they're doing it because they want to bring the female to estrus quicker. So it could be both, or it could be the side effect of them doing it for food is the female comes into estrus quicker. But when I was bear hunting in Alberta, we got to watch a male try to get this female's cubs, and the female fought the male off, and we're like 30, 40 yards away from this. It was fucking crazy.
But were you commentating? Were you?
I kind of was.
I bet you were.
I kind of was. But my mouth was wide
open.
Oh,
the black one goes for mouth. Full mount on the bear.
They were standing up, too. Like, attacking each
other. That was
really,
that was pretty good.
I was there,
dude. Is that what it was?
I actually saw it. But it's kind of fucked when you see it. Like, the guys, while we were in camp, one of the guys witnessed a male kill one of the cubs. And then he ate half of it, and then the female came over and chased him away eventually, and then she ate the rest of her own cub. It's hard out there for a pimp. It's hard.
But you were bear hunting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
None of those three looked like a good target, or?
No, well, the male...
You wanted to hike up the mountain.
No. The male was a good target, but he wouldn't sit still, and he was too far away, and he was in between trees. And when he came up to the female took... We wouldn't kill the female, and we definitely wouldn't kill a female with cubs. And when the male came over, like, it was also getting dark, where he was totally on that borderline where you're not really sure you could see exactly where you're shooting, especially with a bow and arrow.
Oh, it was a bow.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, where archery.
How many times do you have to shoot a bear with a bow?
I shot it once because I shot it right. If you shoot it once, you go through the double lungs.
Yeah.
You know, with these bows... The power of these bows is insane. Really? You know, a real Hoyt compound bow, 80-pound pull. You're talking like 288 feet per second of 468 grain arrows flying with razor-sharp broadheads, right, blows right through the body. I mean, oh yeah, this is in fucking New Jersey, yeah. Dude. New Jersey has such a bear population problem. New Jersey has the largest population of bears per capita in North America. Big-ass fucking black bears, and they're fighting over who controls the garbage, like the territory where the garbage is. These fucking bears are biting each other in the face in front of people's cars, and they're big. I mean, these are several hundred pounds, these fucking bears. If you go earlier than that, you get to see them knock over the garbage cans. When they first, yeah, up there, back up a little bit. They first start duking it out. Like, one bear is controlling... I mean, this is the guy's fucking front lawn, man. His mailbox is getting knocked over by these bears.
My brother lives in Longwood, Florida, and it's like a gated community. It's like a really nice area. And every night there's giant bears knocking over the trash cans in the backyard.
Yeah.
And I guess the city, like, they won't do anything about it.
Well, they didn't want to open up a bear hunting season in Florida, but they're starting to do it.
Yeah.
In New Jersey, they have a real issue. A fucking kid got killed. A Rutgers student got killed in New Jersey by a bear.
Yeah, I guess somebody in my brother's neighborhood got mauled. Some lady got mauled.
Yeah, dude.
And then you got these idiots that are like fucking leaving food out for the bears.
Oh, yeah.
It keeps them coming.
Yeah, well, that's another thing about bears. It's not like a deer. If you leave food out for a deer, it'll eat that food and then go find food other places. You leave food out for a bear, he knows that's where the food is.
Yeah.
He'll keep coming back. So they have real problems when a bear like this, when a bear gets a hold of your garbage, like these bears, they're going to war right here because they've found a spot where the garbage is. So look at these fucking guys just duking. These are huge bears, man.
Because I keep telling him, like, hey, shoot the fucking bear.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like two giant English mastiffs. I'm like, shoot the bear. Feed him the bear meat.
Yeah.
You know, this is good. He's like, oh, what if I shoot it? It doesn't fucking die. It doesn't, you know?
I'm
like,
257?
How many shots? One?
You just go right through the lungs.
Lungs. Kevin, listen. Joe Rogan's giving me advice here.
Double lung.
Pay attention.
Wait till it turns sideways. You get a broadside shot. You shoot right behind the arms. Like right where the armpit is, right there, boom, goes right through. Especially with a bow and arrow, you'll penetrate through both lungs and it'll be dead in seconds.
I mean, when you're talking like 10 feet away, you know, 15 feet, it's in the yard.
Yeah, they're not scared. They're not scared of people at all.
Yeah, what he said, if he's afraid of is what if he, you know,
hurts
doesn't
it.
Hit it, yeah, he hurts it but doesn't kill it and thing charges him?
That's possible.
I'm like, you got five more shots?
Yeah.
357?
Well, he's going to use a pistol?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would use a rifle.
Rifle?
If he's going to shoot a gun, get a real, you know, get a 7mm Remington Ultra Mag, something like that. Just blow one through him where he's not getting up.
12-gauge slug's not going to handle it.
You could. Yeah, you could.
Go to the slug cap.
I'm a fan of rifles.
Yeah?
Like, it's just, yeah, it's super accurate, very precise.
I just don't want him to miss and shoot the neighbor's house and dog. And
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Where does he live, Florida?
Yeah.
Can you use suppressors in Florida? Can you use silencers?
I don't know.
There's a problem in California. You can't use silencers, which is really
stupid.
Does
that work? I saw in a Steven Seagal movie, he like taped a 20-ounce bottle to the end of it. You see that movie? You think it's like under siege? Would that work?
Everything in Steven Seagal movies are actual and factual.
Right.
That's the only thing he allows. He doesn't allow anything in a movie unless it's absolutely correct.
Really?
No. I don't know. I'm sure it doesn't work.
I'm serious. A two-liter bottle.
Of Coke or something?
Yeah. I mean, it sure doesn't silence it, but it might, like...
Probably takes a little bit off of it.
A little bit off of it.
It's kind of weird. I was talking to this guy from Sig Sauer yesterday about this.
Tried it.
Oh, they tried it? Let's hear it.
See? You thought I made that up, didn't you?
See? Ready? This is the Steven Seagal Silence 45.
That's going to shoot this dude right in the face. Yeah. You know he's going to die here.
Hey, if this doesn't work, I'm sending it to Jack.
Is he going to shoot it at the bottom, at the ground, this dummy?
No.
Okay, here he goes. No.
Yeah, that wasn't very quiet.
Didn't work at all. Mm. How to make a suppressor from a flashlight? Uh-oh. Is that real?
Yeah. That's probably gone forever.
Oh, let's see. Let's see how it works. We'll just pull it ahead. Oh, this guy's like going deep.
Yeah.
He's building shit.
That'll work.
But it's weird because in California, silencers are illegal. I don't know why. Because if you can hunt, and you can hunt with a rifle, what a silencer does is it eliminates the sound. It doesn't eliminate it totally, but that big boom, do you want the boom? Like, why?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like, it's one of those weird things where people they're not thinking logically and objectively when they create laws.
Mm.
Like, they think that someone's going to, like, snipe people and you're not going to hear it and someone's going to die and get shot. But the reality is, if somebody shoots you, like, it doesn't matter if there was a bang or not.
Yeah.
It's the rifle still works.
Yeah.
You have to have a silencer on your muffler. You have to have a silencer on lawn equipment, mm-hmm. lawn mowers, anything. You have to use some sort of a muffler, but not on rifles. You can't have it on rifles.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get most of it.
You shouldn't get most of it. Most of it doesn't make sense.
I don't get not a huge fan of the police force nowadays, Joe.
It's getting ugly out there, isn't it?
It's so bad. It's so just bad.
You know, I think part of it is, I think it's just numbers. You're also dealing with 350 million people in this country. Who knows how many thousands and thousands of police officers? Who knows how many incidents they have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how many people are incompetent? And the ones that are incompetent, they get highlighted, mm-hmm. videotaped, put out there. And I also think that there's a culture that they have developed of doing shit in a fucked up way that people don't like, that they got away with for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then cell phones and cameras and YouTube came along, and now everybody's super aware of it, and you just can't do it anymore. You just can't do what they've been doing their whole career.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there obviously, there are racial issues or whatever, but I just think that those get highlighted even more. But I see just fucking asshole cops doing asshole things to every color person, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's just that lately it's been highlighted. But it's like, if no one's fucking shooting at you, stop shooting people. You know, when did they become such pussies that, like, you know, there was a video of a guy walking out of his house with a screwdriver. And, like, he was literally walking. He was, like, with his wife. He was, like, a 50-year-old man. And he's walking out with, like, a screwdriver in his hand like this. Like, he was walking to the mailbox to fix something. And the cops, like, shot him, like, 9 times.
What?
Yeah. And then didn't, like, try to help him or anything. They, like, you know.
What were they responding to? Like, what did they think he was doing?
I think it was domestic violence or something. I don't even know what it was. But it was, like, the older woman walks out. And then the husband walks out right behind him. And he was like, oh, drop it, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like, what? And then and they shot him like 9 times. Mm. And then they don't even go up to, like, help the guy. You know, it's like, I find almost like these guys are just looking for that opportunity for when it's okay than more so like when it's necessary. You know?
There's a lot of them that just definitely do that. There's a lot of them that are just too stupid to be cops for sure. I think most people are unqualified to be cops. We've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast. I just think that we have to appreciate the fact that being a cop is a fucking ridiculously hard job. You want to talk about PTSD for soldiers, but nobody talks about PTSD for cops. Mm. Cops are dealing with horrible shit every fucking day of the week, and most of them are doing a great job, and the ones that do a great job you don't hear anything about. It's the ones that fuck up and shoot, like that guy in South Carolina that shot that guy as he was running away.
And then planted the gun on him.
Did he plant a gun on him?
Planted the taser or something. Like, you watch him, like, he walks up and, like, sets something else on the floor.
Oh, really?
Then the story was, oh, he went for my taser. And it was like, they didn't go for your taser, motherfucker.
Oh, my God. They did that?
But, of course, that gets spun into the black guy, God. You know? Well, if that was a fucking, it didn't matter who that was, he was going to do that same shit, too, you know?
Yeah, but a guy goes for your taser and then runs away. You don't get to shoot him.
Yeah.
You don't get to shoot him as he's running away.
And then I don't get to shoot him while he's running away and then run up and put the taser down next to him.
I didn't even know that. That's awful. Yeah. I didn't know that he did that. Oh, God. I just
think there are good cops, you know? But it's like, if you're a good cop, how many bad cops have you narked out? Because you know how many other ones are in the station. You know what I mean? Like, there's just this, this, like, brotherhood of, you know, I'm gonna stand up for our own, and you know, that's what bugs me about it.
It's always been that way.
Yeah,
my dad was a cop.
It's really upsetting and disgusting, and to have kids and to have see all this shit right now, it's just really scary.
And worry about your sons getting involved in something, having some asshole cop do something.
Yeah, I mean, my wife, my fiance, sorry, babe, it sounded really bad. She's mixed, and, like, we have two boys, and one of them looks white, and the other one looks, you know, mixed and black, you know? And, this racial shit and ignorance is, it's upsetting, scary.
It should be. Yeah, it is. And I'm hoping that all this anger and all these protests and all these videos that are coming out and all these YouTube videos and all these people that are rising up, that's going to change things. I hope.
Yeah. But it just seems like martial law is coming. Like, there was something about, you know, it's like somebody said something about they're allowing the conditions to eventually go to martial law.
Yeah, people say things like that.
The way
that
the news media is, like, highlighting everything, it just makes it so much worse. Ah, it's just all bad.
I think they're highlighting it because that's what people want to pay attention to. I really don't think there's any concerted effort to create martial law. There's a lot of conspiracy theories about that stuff, but I think that's just horseshit. Mm. I think the last thing they want is an armed culture of Americans involved in martial law. It's just like, It's not going to work. This is not the country we could pull that off.
Yeah.
This is not, you can't take everybody's guns away. It will fucking never happen.
Yeah.
There's more guns in this country than there are people. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to take away I don't know if there's more guns than people, but I bet it's close. It's not going to happen. I just think that people panic about that kind of stuff, and people always love talking about some tyrannical conspiracy where the government comes in. And
even when you try not to, it's like someone says something and you, it's hard not to.
Did you grow up in a family with guns? You had guns in your family all the time?
I grew up hunting. We started hunting and shooting at like 10, 12.
Yeah.
I think when I went rabbit hunting when I was 12. I was shooting since I was like...
Your dad was into it?
Yeah, my dad was into it. My brother and I.
We didn't talk about this the last time, and this is something that was controversial after our podcast, because during the Manhoof training camp, your dad died.
Right.
How hard was that, man, to go through?
My dad and I had like a weird relationship. My dad and I had like a falling out probably 10 or 12 years ago. I hadn't spoken in 10 years, and... he came to one of my fights when I've won Glory 10 with Artem Levin. And it was one of the biggest things that Vinny helped me work on. I found out my dad had cancer. And, like, my reaction when my brother and sister told me was, like, fuck him. Like, I don't care. Like, I really didn't care. I hated him that much. I was just, like, hated him. Like, we had, like, some really bad issues. And when I started talking to Vinny... You know, I mentioned, yeah, my dad had cancer, and I didn't know how I felt about it, because part of me, like, cared, you know, at some point. And Vinny did some, like, he called it timeline therapy, and we had this is not at all what I was planning on talking about, but he asked me all of these scenarios, like, think of a time in your life when you were really proud, and then think of a time when you were really upset, and, like, all these different emotions. And he didn't know what it was about or what was going to happen. He was just trying it on me. And every one of the things that he talked about was my dad. Like, every one of those times was a time with my dad. And he did, like, the whole session or whatever. And at the end of it, I just had no more resentment or anger toward my dad. And it was really weird. And it was like this chip on my shoulder, like, my whole life. And at one point, for a long time, I used to think about my dad before I would fight, when I was fighting professionally. Like, I would use, not necessarily like I'm fighting my dad, but like to shove it up his ass. Like, look what I'm going to do, you know? And I realized that, like, that anger that I had and that I used to tap into all the time was actually, like, holding me back. And it was almost like a handicap. And when he helped me forgive my dad, I was able to go to Florida. This is, you know, he's got stage 4 cancer, he's gonna die. And I had a relationship with my dad for the last year before he died that I hadn't had in 10 years, and that was from that Vinny helped me do that. Yeah.
That's gotta have a big impact on the way you raise your own sons.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, knowing the resentment that you had towards your father, and the anger, and mm-hmm. the bad relationship. Like, never wanting it to get to that place.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. It was, Vinny didn't know that that was even going to be the result. He was just like, oh, I want to try this timeline therapy thing on you. And, I went from, like, completely hating him to, like, just forgiving him completely. Not, like, half-ass forgiving him to, like, waiting for that apology. Like, there was no apology. There was no talking about it. It was, like, completely starting over. And, we had, like, a really good... a relationship for that last year before he died. And I knew that he was battling cancer. My brother started treating him. He was stage 4. I mean, it was the doctors like, you know, your dad's going to die. He had cancer in his lungs, cancer in his brain, cancer in his chest, and cancer in his neck. He had like this giant mass on his neck. And my brother started treating him with CBD oil. And allegedly, I was shipping it to him from here into Florida or whatever. But that probably wasn't very good.
Allegedly.
There was
fiction for fictional purposes.
And we were giving him CBD oil for about, I don't know, I guess 7 months probably. And after he wasn't going to chemo, he just didn't want to do it. He was like really stubborn, stubborn guy. Wouldn't do that. And they tested him. They did like a graph or whatever to see where the cancer, if it had grown or whatever over a period of time. And they were shocked that 90% of the cancer had died. That there was 90% of the cancer was dead, and 10% of the cancer that was still alive was like completely surrounded in dead cells, so that they couldn't get even medicine to it, and it couldn't grow. And he was gonna have to live with it, you know, but it was completely surrounded by dead cancer cells. And the only thing possibly that could have done it was the CBD oil, because he was doing nothing else correctly. He was like, they had him on so many narcotics and pain pills and stuff that he's an asshole to be around. It was really hard. It was like constantly on like this drug thing. And he wouldn't eat. All he wanted to eat was like chocolate cake and ice cream, you know, like wouldn't, it was like really hard.
All bad for cancer.
We're like, trying to get him the right supplements and, you know, it was a tough situation. But the CBD oil was beating the cancer, and the cancer wasn't what killed him. He actually died from like starvation or malnourishment from not doing what we would beg him to do. You know,
really.
But wow. Yeah, 90% of the cancer was dead. CBD oil, people, it really works.
It's working right now for my friend's mom. My friend's mom has stage 4 cancer in her brain. I allegedly got him some CBD oil, and he got it to his mom within less than 2 months. Her cancer had shrunk by 30%.
Yep.
She had been doing chemo, and they were saying that her immune system was so devastated by the chemo that the chemo was probably going to kill her quicker than the cancer was, and they had recommended her stopping chemo, and he was just in full desperation mode. My friend's real super straight edge. He's just, you know, Mr. Republican American, doesn't, you know, thinks Obama's a Muslim, that kind of guy.
Yep.
And never would want to have anything to do with CBD oil or anything cannabis. I got it to him, and now his mom can sleep. She's eating. She sleeps at night. She doesn't have pain anymore. Her tumor's shrinking. The doctors are astounded.
Yep.
Those stories, you hear so many of them. It's almost like they seem like anecdotal fairy tales because until it happens to someone you actually know and care about, and then you go, and then you start getting angry.
Yeah.
Like, this is what these goddamn assholes that are making laws in this country and fighting against us, the lobbyists and the people that are working for the pharmaceutical companies that are actively trying to suppress this information. You are keeping one of the best ways to heal these people. You're keeping it illegal. And it's a fucking horrible crime.
And they won't even tell you about it, which is just atrocious. Like, my dad is, they're giving my brother the talk that my dad is going to die, and it's terminal and, you know, all this stuff. For, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks, he's going to the doctor, and finally my brother's like, hey, so, you know, what about, you know, medical marijuana? Is that something that, and they're like, oh yeah, we can prescribe him Marinol, but we just can't, you know, there's no question that the cannabis or THC, whatever it is, cannabis helps fight cancer, but we can't refer, you have to ask, we can't just offer it to you. And then they gave him the prescription for Marinol, which is like the government pharmaceutical form of the pill, which was probably way weaker than the
way
CBD
weaker
oil than we were giving him.
Yeah, not nearly as good.
So yeah, anyway. Like we got the call. I got the call from my dad or my brother that my dad had passed away. I think it was 3 weeks before the Melvin Manoff fight.
Wow.
And I flew home to Florida to, you know, kind of with my brother and sister and figure out the situation, what we were going to do. And my brother picked me up from the airport, and we went to, you know, straight to the bar to, you know, have it out about my dad. And when we got back to his house, my uncle had called, and, you know, we just assumed that my uncle was calling to, you know, give us his, you know, sorry about your dad. And my sister answers the phone, and my uncle is hysterical. And I guess my cousin Cody, who was 23, was very close with this huge fan of mine, had fallen off a balcony on their vacation and died the same night. And so it was a ton of stuff to deal with that last, you know, 2 weeks before my fight. And, again, I talked to Vinny, and, you know, he helped me stay focused on what I needed to do to handle business in that fight. And, you know, Vinny Sherman, can't thank him enough for that stuff.
That's got to be unbelievably difficult to deal. Both of those things, unbelievably difficult to deal with while you're trying to focus on, especially fighting a guy like Manhoff.
Yeah,
who's a scary
then,
fuck.
You know, every post anybody tags me in is like Melvin Manhoff's highlight reel. You know, so it's like fuck. You know, it was tough. You know, and it just drains you. Having, you know, I come back and I got 2 weeks left before the fight, and I'm trying to, you know, trying to stay focused, and you know, I can run at a good clip, and you know, I run 6 miles. You know, regularly, and like I'd be like half a mile in and just be exhausted because all of this mental stuff just wears on you. And you know, I had this internal battle with myself of, you know, should I pull out of the fight, should I not pull out of the fight. And I talked to Vinny, and I was like, you know, I don't know what to do. And he was like, he's just a dick. Actually, he was like your dad and your cousin died. And I was like, yes. And he's like, and that's sad. And I'm like, yes. And he's like, and you're never going to see them again. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm never going to see him again. He's like, and that's not fair. And I was like, yeah, motherfucker, it's not fair. You know? And he's like, you know, he says all this shit. And then he's like, now what? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, what are you going to do now? And I was like, he's like, are you going to not ever fight again? Are you going to not take care of your family? Are you going to, you know, let this stop you from everything you've ever wanted to do? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, then just turn off that app and wait until after your fight handle your business, you know, whether you're religious or not, at some level somewhere, you think your cousin and your father, what would they want? And it's like, well, I talked to both of them about the fight. They were both excited about the fight. I knew what they were going to want. So I just kind of turned off that emotion until after the fight. And when I knocked out Melvin, there's like this, this moment right after like the referee stops it, I like fucking explode. And there's like a Bellator post the picture all the time. But like at that moment was like all of that emotion that I had turned off, like came back right at that moment. And, you know, after the fight, I was like thinking about them and stuff, and it was really cool.
Wow. Wow. That's intense. Wow.
But there's like,
that's an iconic photo too. Yeah. The photo of you right after you knocked him out. Uh-huh. That's a pretty intense photo.
Yeah.
That was a crazy fight too, man.
It was a big one. It was a big one for
Melvin
me.
Is a wild motherfucker, dude.
Yeah.
Win, lose, draw. That fucking you're in for some chaos with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it crazy? All those guys from that Mike's gym, Badr Hari, him, Kokan. There's so many of those guys are just fucking ferocious.
Yeah, that's that style out of that gym. I mean, that's why we're all
there. It is right there.
Yeah, that was that moment right there.
Well, we're running out of time, man. So let's end it with that. That's a fucking perfect picture to wrap this podcast up with. That's intense. With Melvin down behind you. You need that. You got that on your gym?
Yeah.
Is that up on the wall?
Yeah. I got to put it up on the wall.
That should fucking for sure be up at the yard.
Yeah.
The yard in downtown LA.
Yeah.
Best place to train some Muay Thai in California if you're around. And if you're in San Diego, Glory 21 is this Friday night, tomorrow. And next time you will be fighting is June?
June 26th for Bellator.
And where is that at?
I believe it's in Kansas City.
Kansas City. All right, man. You can catch him. You changed your Twitter name. Joe Schilling, yeah. 187. I like it.
Yeah.
Better than three, right? Was it two or three?
Yeah.
Joe Schilling, 187 on Twitter. Thanks, brother. Appreciate you coming by, man. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Of course.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back next week. We've got a full schedule of podcast. Thanks, everybody. Much love. See you soon.